Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us once more on Queensbury Rules Radio. I'm Patrick Connor of QueensburyRules.com, and of course, like every week except for the weeks we take off, I have here with me James Foley of BadLeftHook.com. Jimmy.
Patrick, what's going on, my man?
I'm trying to figure out how many ways I could just, like, say that without being over the top at the beginning of the show. I'm going to have to try to find out.
I don't envy you.
Yeah, I don't know. I've got to be creative somehow, right?
Every time, but you've done a hell of a job.
I try, buddy, and I got some new ridiculous, stupid, sound bites and stuff like that for us today so that we sound a little bit more professional or whatever. I mean, whatever that's all about, you know, if you're into that sort of thing. We're not, but we'll see. We'll see how they go. Man, you know, I like to complain. People know that by now, I think. Pretty sure you know that. You like to complain as well, of course, but I'm a bit of a hater. And
we're not happy unless we're unhappy.
No, exactly. We're like, you know, we're basically like that gruff-looking guy in the painting at Goodfellas, you know, the guy that's got the beard and, like, the gray
he's
hair.
He's going one way,
he's
looking the other way.
Yeah, the dog's looking the other way. I mean, what do you want? It's a sin. But, you know. I've been bitching and moaning about all of the lack of boxing that we've had so far in 2014, but it looks like it's going to be picking up some steam this last weekend, not really included, unfortunately, at least in my opinion, but it's going to be picking up steam, and we're going to have a ton of shit to talk about, of course. But since we took last week off, James' suggestion was that we get a little bit of a Pacquiao-Bradley discussion in there since we weren't able to last week, but... I don't know. What was your overall feeling?
Let's talk about the B-Hop Shumanov and the fucking Pauly card. Let's talk about that instead.
Oh, you want to do that shit first?
No, fuck that. No, I don't want to do that at all.
Okay. Well, we should, but you know, yeah, we'll try to keep it to a minimum, I guess. Well, what was your overall feeling on that Pacquiao Bradley 2 business?
I thought it was a really good fight, and I think that, you know, Pacquiao deserves a lot of credit. I think you can kind of see that, you know, I think that Pacquiao, because of the style that he fights in, which is so reliant on that kind of quickness and athleticism, and you know, fundamentally he's not a perfect fighter the way that Mayweather is. He doesn't have that kind of that solid technique. He's always just kind of been more of a, you know, a fighter and an athletic freak and phenom, you know, since he kind of hit, you know, peaked as a real mainstream attraction. Almost like, I think a comparison could be made that between two of the, you know, best fighters from the kind of the previous era, although one of them's still around, obviously, but, you know, Bernard Hopkins and Roy Jones. I think Pacquiao is more like a Roy Jones and Mayweather more like a Hopkins, a guy who can, you know, has a you know, really solid foundation of boxing technique and all that stuff. And so I think that, you know, Pacquiao is the type of fighter that tends to fall off the cliff, you know, very fast toward the end of their career, like Roy, you know, a guy who just the second that those reflexes and speed and things have kind of you know you just lose a step, all of a sudden you get knocked out and you're never the same. And I think that everyone was kind of very, you know, quick to you know, kind of put the dagger in his career after the Marquez knockout, where he just got caught with that perfect punch. But I think these last two fights, especially against, you know, a real world-class opponent like Tim Bradley, have shown that, you know, Pacquiao's not done. And I think that he very smartly is kind of reinventing himself into more of a boxer, somebody who's, you know, he's kind of maximizing his assets. And, you know, this, he still has the speed, the hand speed, the quickness, you know, fleet of foot. And I think that it was, you know, it was a really good performance from him against a guy who I thought was really, you know, determined in there. And you know, Bradley was going in there to knock his head off. And I respect the hell out of Bradley for what he did. I think Bradley's best strategy for winning was probably to try to be very, you know, very negative like he was in the second half of the first fight, to try to negate Pacquiao's offense and look for kind of one punch at a time and try to land the cleaner punches and you know, maybe try to eke some kind of a, you know, another kind of close decision. But, I really respect that Bradley didn't go that route because he really wanted – he wanted an emphatic win. He didn't want to win another decision like that. He wanted to either, you know, knock Pacquiao out or beat the crap out of him. And obviously, it backfired, but, you know, it was a much better fight for us to watch. And I came away, you know, respecting both guys a lot. And I think Bradley, you know, again, kind of endeared himself to fans. I don't think he has anything to be, you know, ashamed of. I thought it was a really close fight through, you know, about six or seven rounds. I actually thought Bradley might have had an edge early. And then, you know, Pacquiao took over, and he was just the better man. I think he deserves a lot of credit for, you know, this is three out of his last four fights were against, you know, twice against Tim Bradley and once against Marquez. You know, two guys who are, you know, legitimate pound-for-pound top 10 at worst, probably. And, you know, in those fights, I think he should have won two of them. But I respect him just for, you know, just for fighting guys
the Marquez fight and the Pacquiao fight, right? But you thought he should have won the Marquez fight, right?
I'm saying, you know, I'm saying, you know, aside from getting knocked out by Marquez, I think he should have two wins over Bradley. But my point is, like, you know, I just respect the fact that he's fighting these guys. I think it's a really high level of competition on that, you know, side of the bracket. And Rios is no cupcake, but obviously he's not, you know, an elite fighter the way that those guys are. But he's still, you know, back end of top 10 of his division guy. But I just think that it's funny because I think everyone was so quick to kind of bury Pacquiao even before he got knocked out by Marquez. People were saying, oh, he's lost a step, he's not the same guy. It's like, well, okay, he's not the guy who knocked out Ricky Hatton in two rounds, but he wasn't really that guy before the Ricky Hatton fight. You know, and I just think he kind of was a victim of his own success, that because he was able to do that and because he was able to just beat the crap out of a kind of a weight-drained Oscar De La Hoya, everybody expected that he was going to just run, you know, obliterate all of these bigger guys and tough guys and, you know, smart fighters. And, you know, we talked last week, or 2 weeks ago, Mosley's and Margaritos and Marquez. I mean, those guys just don't really get knocked out. And I think Tim Bradley's in that same category. And Brandon Rios obviously has an iron chin. So I don't know. My overall takeaway is I think it was a really good performance for Pacquiao. And there was some debate over, you know, I know pound for pound is kind of stupid to even argue about. It's all so subjective, and it doesn't really matter where you rank these guys because it's not like it's going to ever, like, lead to anything. And it's just, you know, it's just kind of a rhetorical exercise. But I think there's a really strong case that you can put Pacquiao back in there at number two. Just with Andre Ward having had one fight in the last 18 months, and that was against Edwin Rodriguez, a guy that I think is a good fighter, but certainly levels beneath, or, you know, a level beneath Tim Bradley and Juan Manuel Marquez. And I know Pacquiao didn't beat Marquez, but I think just fighting, you know, at that level of competition and now beating a guy, you know, pretty decisively in Tim Bradley, who, you know, on most people's list after he beat Marquez was, you know, a top five, top 10 pound for pound guy. I think you could put Pacquiao in terms of, you know, his resume in the last couple of years as well. And I know he has that loss, but as well as just, you know, the level that he still appears to be at, that he can still go out there at 35 years old. And I think pretty handily beat, you know, a determined tough challenger, a guy who's just a really good professional fighter in Tim Bradley, that Pacquiao can go out there and beat him. You know, and Pacquiao wasn't, you know, he wasn't fighting for 30 seconds a round or a minute a round. He wasn't stealing rounds. I mean, he really, really beat him. I think that combined with, you know, how good he looked in that fight combined with what he's done the last couple of years, to me it outweighs whatever Andre Ward, you know, however good Andre Ward is. Because eventually, you know, you have to win fights and you have to kind of beat those guys to keep your place in that pecking order. So as far as I'm concerned, I think it's completely fair to say Pacquiao's right back in that pound-for-pound number two spot right behind Mayweather.
I think that it's, you know, after Floyd from, I don't know, maybe 2 to 10 or whatever, I don't really make the list. However, if you do, and I have no problem with it, but if you do, it's kind of tough there pretty much after Floyd. I mean, you could have, I'd say there's probably a core of about 5 to 7 guys that all have to be in that top 10, and you can kind of mix and match just about anywhere. I mean, Andre Ward has been inactive, and there's no sign that he's going to be fighting anytime real soon. He's trying to sue, you know, Goose and Tudor Promotions. He's trying to break away from them, you know, all this type of stuff. So it doesn't really look like he's going to be fighting all that soon. So if you wanted to put Pacquiao back in there, you know, a lot of people had Marquez in that number two spot, then Tim Bradley beat him, and now Pacquiao beat Bradley. So I don't think that that's a bad argument at all. But I do want to say that I think that's a really good point about the Hopkins versus Jones, or, you know, Hopkins and Jones to Bradley and Mayweather type of thing. I think that it's a pretty good point, and also especially because even though Jones and Hopkins fought in, I think it was 93, but, you know, both before they really got big, you know, that we're also looking at a scenario where they won't fight again when it's meaningful.
But, yeah, will Mayweather-Pacquiao have more meaning when it happens than Hopkins-Jones too? Probably.
Yeah,
that's
the question here. Yeah, if that does eventually happen at some point, and how many fouls is who going to fake? And you know, fucking Bernard Hopkins, man. But it's a very good point though. I've heard some people say things, you know, like that, and I think that's a really good point overall, especially because the point about Manny Pacquiao basically having to trade, I guess you could say, physical talent for, you know, some semblance of skill and balls too in the ring as he gets older and he starts to lose his speed a little bit. And he's never really had great legs as far as I'm concerned. I mean, a lot of these facets of his game have really improved. There's no question. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, he's still not a, you know, he's not a slickster. He's not really a super skilled guy. He's still
using his speed.
Well, I'm not saying that he's not a bad boxer by any means, but
I think
he's definitely not.
I think his defense is really underrated when you consider the fact that outside of Marquez, I mean, not many guys have been able to really, you know, most of the time Pacquiao's gotten hit, I know this is easy to say, but it seems like it's kind of been as a result of his own, you know, risk-taking and, you know, but when he fights in that kind of more defensive style, which I thought he did against Bradley and against Rios, you know, he's not an easy guy to hit. I mean, like, I think Lampley had a great point during the fight, which is like, you know, people never really talk about his defense, but I mean, the way he does pick those shots with his gloves and kind of bounces in and out, and obviously a lot of that's, you know, reliant on his athleticism and his reflexes and stuff, but as long as he still has those, I think he's kind of underrated as a defensive fighter.
I would agree that he's probably underrated a little bit, and he's definitely not, you know, he's not an unskilled guy.
Yeah, he's not Mayweather. I mean, he's not shoulder-rolling dudes, and he's not standing in front of guys and not getting hit, but, you know.
Yeah, he does get hit, and he's not necessarily difficult to hit, but it is kind of difficult to hit really clean. But regardless, I think that the whole point about, you know, as his speed and everything goes, that he's having to use just kind of a different type of skill set is valid, especially because Mayweather just has better fundamentals, I guess is a way you can put it. Mayweather is just able to, you know, throw slightly straighter punches or more textbook punches. You know, his defense is now becoming less predicated on the speed of avoiding punches and countering immediately. And, you know, it's starting to kind of tip towards he goes to the ropes and avoids punches that way, although he's always done that. But even now, he's becoming just a little bit more physical of a fighter because he has to fight inside a little more often, it seems. But regardless, as far as the fight goes, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I thought that, I agree with you that I really have to give Tim Bradley some respect. And, you know, it was kind of, you know, fitting but disconcerting at the same time that he still seemed to be getting shit on after that fight when he came out in the first half especially. And he was really winging hard for a knockout punch. And he's just not really that type of fighter, never really has been. I've said in the past that I think that his power is a little bit underrated in that he might not knock you out, but if you open your defense to him and get tagged by him real clean and he's throwing hard, he can hurt you. And we saw that. I thought it was maybe two or three times against Manny in the first, I think it was four or five rounds. And he wasn't like wobbling all over, but he looked stunned when you know, Bradley really wound up for a right hand or there was one left hook that he hit him with that kind of took him off guard. You know, it definitely was not enough to win the fight, but it was surprising. And so regardless, point being that I just was kind of like, damn, he's still not going to get respect for that. Or he came out and did everything he could to try to knock a dude out so that he could prove that he deserved to win a fight rather than, you know, he was kind of like driven to be a fighter that he really wasn't by all the hatred. So I still kind of feel bad for the guy in a way, and I hope that in the eyes of most, he brought his stock up. So anyway, that's my feeling on the fight.
I think he should have, you know. But the thing is, like, I think, I don't know, sometimes I feel like Manny almost, I don't know. It just seems like, you know, he really is just a great once-in-a-generation athlete. I mean, the guy is an amazing, you know, his reflexes, his speed. And I always remember that when he knocked out Hatton and you looked at the slow motion of that, and it was like he hits him with that punch and then ducks an incoming punch, you know, like a split second after hitting Hatton. And it's just like the reflexes of that. And it kind of reminded me in this fight when Bradley hit him clean with that big right hand and Pacquiao, both of his feet came off the canvas. You know, he was like in the air and his eyes were closed, you know, absorbing the blow from that punch, and he still managed to come down on his feet and didn't really, his balance wasn't really affected, you know, and it's like that
like
kind
a
of
cat.
Stuff. Yeah, I mean, he's just a special athlete, and he has been. And I think that boxers who are such great athletes tend to, you know, they have very rapid declines often. And I think Roy is kind of like the textbook case of that for our generation. You know, he basically, you know, goes to heavyweight, comes back down, and kind of struggles with Tarver, and then just gets knocked out in the rematch, and he's just basically never the same. You know, he's done. I mean, he was not a world-class fighter from that point forward. And I just think so many people were eager to write that same narrative for Pacquiao after the Marquez fight. And, you know, this fight convinced me that I think he's going to still be a viable, you know, elite fighter, at least for the, you know, for the time being.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a weird landscape, especially at 147 pounds, that I'm not entirely sure what to expect. And I think that, you know, there might be a couple guys there that just stylistically might take it from him. But at the same time, the options are, needless to say, just limited because of all the, you know, the top rank versus golden boy bullshit.
Right.
So
that's the problem.
Yeah.
And it was interesting to me that Lampley was kind of suggesting a trilogy after the fight, because I just... You know, I love Tim Bradley, but I feel like I've already seen Pacquiao beat him twice, and I thought he beat him. I thought Bradley fought better in the second fight, and I still thought that Pacquiao pretty handily won that fight, something like 8-4 to 9-3. So, I don't really need to see that third fight between them. I mean, I know it's 1-1. I'm much more intrigued, and I know a lot of people are just sick of it, but I mean, I think if you have to do it, kind of more all about, you know, Pacquiao Marquez 5. It's
I don't know, man. I mean, I once again seem to kind of be an outlier over here in this whole Pacquiao Marquez 5 thing.
But, you know, after three fights, after two fights, everybody was ready to give up. And then they did a third. It was great. You know, they did a fourth. It was also great. You know, I mean, I don't see how we can lose, really, unless one of them is so eroded that they're just like have nothing left. I think that these are two guys that are always going to match up, like, perfectly. It's always going to be a good fight until one of them is totally shot. You know,
yeah,
I'd love to see it again.
You know, and that's the thing, is when I was going on my whole rant about, oh, Pacquiao should be number two pound for pound, I mean, you can't ignore that Marquez still has a knockout over him and hasn't lost to him since then. I mean, he lost to Bradley. So, I mean, I think all those guys fit in. My whole point was kind of like, I just think all three of them have kind of shown themselves, but especially Marquez and Pacquiao, who have had a much longer, you know, been at the top of the sport a lot longer than Bradley has. I just think I tend to favor guys like that when you're talking about a pound-for-pound landscape over somebody like Andre Ward, who, yes, he's had some big wins, but, I mean, how long ago now was that Carl Froch win? How long ago was, you know, beating Mikel Kessler? I mean, I think Marquez knocked out Manny Pacquiao. You know, Pacquiao, I mean, Bradley beat Marquez, Pacquiao beat, I just think these guys are higher levels of fighters, no disrespect, but I mean, I think Carl Froch is, I love watching the guy fight. I think he's a really good fighter. I think he's got, you know, he really has made the most of his natural ability, but to me, does a guy like Andre Ward beating Froch, is that much better of a win than Pacquiao beating Margarito? I don't know. Not really, in my opinion. I mean, I understand, like, you know, I just think that, like, I feel like I just, and I'm sorry to go on this rant because it kind of has nothing to do with anything, but I've just lately been thinking that, like, yes, Andre Ward's been dominant and he's had some really good wins. I didn't put that much stock into knocking out Chad Dawson because I thought the weight was a big issue, but I understand. I mean, that's a big win on paper, too. But I don't know. I just think if you're that inactive and, you know, he's had two fights in, what, like 3 years, and it was against Edwin Rodriguez and then knocking out Chad Dawson, I don't think he deserves to be in that discussion. I mean, I know he's that good, maybe, but has he really fought an elite fighter? I mean, Kessler, very good. Frotch, very, very good. I don't know if I can say he's elite. But when I see Marquez and Pacquiao fighting each other, I really think those guys are at the top of the sport. You know, and without that kind of a dance partner, if Ward's not going to go up, you know, if Kovalev can turn into something special. I mean, I think Golovkin's on the verge of it. But, you know, you need to fight great fighters to get into that mix. And guys like, you know, Mayweather, Pacquiao, Marquez, and even Bradley, just by virtue of kind of getting into this trilogy with these guys, getting into the mix with, you know, that three-way with Marquez and Pacquiao, you know, you're fighting that level of competition over so many years. And I'd rate Bradley beneath Ward, but I think the guys, you know, I think those guys deserve to kind of be ranked up there. And so, I mean, my pound for pound might look something like Mayweather, Pacquiao, Marquez if I had to write it out. I mean, I don't care about the Klitschkos doing what they do, and I think Andre Ward's kind of falling in that same thing. He had some good wins a few years ago and, you know, the Dawson thing, but pound for pound's kind of a combination of, like, what have you done lately, and, you know, there's just not much there. So I don't see how he... I felt like him getting up to the number two spot in the first place was a little bit suspect. It was kind of only by virtue... You know, I had Marquez number two after he knocked out Pacquiao. But anyway...
Yeah, I mean, and I mentioned it last week, too, about, like, you know, we don't even really know at this point right now how much the Dawson win was worth, because Dawson hasn't come back since after, he got mauled to death by Andre Ward and then got knocked out quickly by Adonis Stevenson. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of tough to know exactly where to go with assessing, you know, Chad Dawson right now, because he hasn't been back since. So
I think that win would have been much better. Yeah, the win would have been much better if Ward had just fought him at 175.
Oh, there's no question. And, I mean, you know, that was Chad Dawson's fault for basically saying he would do it. But at the same time, you know, I'm not going to blame Andre Ward for taking the fight at 168 pounds when Chad Dawson pretty much offered it. But at the same time, then you kind of have to also accept that you're not going to get the same type of credit for it as it would have been if it would have been in a catch weight and not even necessarily 175 pounds. So regardless, yeah, I'm with you on there. And especially because I don't really enjoy Andre Ward's style about, I don't know, 65% of the time. So,
right.
For me, I could really take or leave the guy at this point.
I just got to go level of competition. I mean, you look at Tim Bradley's last four fights, Pacquiao twice, Marquez, and Provodnikov. How many guys are lining up to fight Provodnikov? I mean, Marquez didn't want any part of Provodnikov, you know? And you look at Andre Ward at his last four fights. How do you have to go back, like 5 years? But, you know, his last four, you got Dawson, Rodriguez, and before that, what, Frotch? I mean, it's like, I don't know, man.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm with you. I'm with you, especially about Pacquiao. I mean, there's no question that he obviously, you know, had slipped a little bit, but at the same time, he's made up for it in other ways. You know, there's no question also that Floyd Mayweather still deserves to be at the top of the sport, but it's almost kind of a default position at this point. And, you know, we'll definitely get into the whole Maidana thing next week, but yeah, I'm with you on the whole pound for pound business.
Yeah. I think you can make a really strong case that, like, Manny at 35 years old beating this version of Tim Bradley, and nobody was out there saying, like, wow, that's Manny's greatest win. I mean, nobody was really, like, touting it as, like, this great thing, but I think Manny beating this version of Tim Bradley, even, you know, is probably a better win than anything Andre Ward's ever done. I mean, I just think Tim Bradley's probably a better fighter than any of those guys, you know? I mean, it's close. I don't think he's, you know...
I guess I would have to, like, sit down and, you know, take a look at both resumes, but right off the top of my head, I can't really have a real strong argument against that.
Well, neither Kessler nor Frotch or Dawson, who, you know, are large, probably considered to be Ward's best wins, none of those guys was coming off a win like what Tim Bradley beating Marquez. I mean, I know Bradley or Dawson beat Hopkins, outboxed a guy who threw, you know, 15 punches a round, and that's great, you know, whatever, but that, you know, I don't know. I'm like, yeah, we're just getting into probably like way too detailed about some shit that has nothing to do with anything. But if I'm really sitting down and I'm looking at like, you know, Bradley over Marquez or Dawson over Hopkins, I'm going with Bradley. And I just think, you know, I think Pacquiao beating him, I think it's a really big win. And I think that, you know, he's gotten some credit for it, sure. But I think more of the storyline was kind of like, that I saw was kind of like, man, Bradley tried to, you know, he fought the wrong fight. He was trying to knock him out the whole time. And, you know, oh, Pacquiao, yeah, you know, he's he looks pretty good, but he obviously is not what he used to be. He doesn't have the power anymore, and now he's trying to box and all that. And it's like, dude, he just easily outpointed, like, one of the top 5 pound-for-pound guys. Meanwhile, Mayweather shuts out Canelo and Guerrero, and we're fucking supposed to act like we're seeing the second coming of Ray Robinson.
Well, he's not? What do you mean he's not?
No, I mean, Mayweather's great. But,
he's,
you know,
dude,
just,
they,
just,
they've
I think
created,
that they've
no,
shaped, they've really been, they have successfully, they have won, you know, that, they've shaped the narrative, I think, in the public perception. You got to give a lot of credit to, you know, TMT, Mayweather, Golden Boy, whoever. They really have done a great job because I think 99% of the public is, you know, convinced that, you know, he's the best fighter in the sport, and no one can ever beat him.
Bro, they've created a new hashtag for Floyd Mayweather, bro. It's TBE, the best ever, bro. Come on. This say everything, buddy. I don't know where that accent came from. I don't even know anybody who speaks that way. But, yeah, seriously, this is kind of – this is a little ridiculous here. And
well, half
even
the shit I read on Twitter after Pac Bradley was about how Mayweather would beat him. It's like, okay.
Yeah, it's – I don't know. Whatever, it – at this point, it doesn't even really matter, any of that type of shit, because it ain't happening. But anyway, as far as Bernard Hopkins goes, we're going to have plenty of time to trash on him later in the show, believe me. But I wanted to, before we get on to that other stuff, we got to recap and then do some brief, you know, previewing. I wanted to hopefully just slide on through the Pacquiao Bradley 2 undercard. Chief supporting bout was, of course, Raimundo Beltran versus, was it Arash Usmani? So, you know, I do have to admit, before I get into any of the details, I have to be a good sport about it. The undercard was better than I thought it was going to be, because I trashed it pretty hard on our last show with Scott Crist on there. But, got to stay the hater a little bit. I didn't think it was a really good undercard, or the type of undercard we should have had to pay that price for. It was better than I thought, but still not that good. But anyway,
yeah.
What was your thoughts on the value and your thoughts on the Beltran versus Usmani fight?
Yeah, I think all the value came from the main event.
For sure.
I mean, I had no delusions about it. You know, I was thinking, okay, maybe we can get, you know, an exciting brawl or something in the, you know, one of the opening fights. And I thought that they were okay, entertainment wise. You know, I came 2 weeks ago. I can't even remember what was the two openers, but I thought I do remember thinking, like, okay, there's some good fights. You know, decent stuff going on, but no real high profile names. I mean, I think Beltran's probably the biggest name on the card, and I guess that fight went about as expected. You know, he's just in a different league than Usmani, and you know, basically beat him up. So I'd like to see, you know, going forward, I think Beltran's an interesting fighter at lightweight, and, you know, I think he'll get an opportunity to fight against somebody like, you know, Terrence Crawford. But, yeah, the overall, pretty shitty. And I don't think you're going to, you know, you can expect much better from, you know, these top rank. I mean, they just don't have enough guys to really load up these undercards. And I don't know if you saw the Cotto Martinez, fucking Yuri Foreman's going to be on the chief support for that.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I do kind of, I totally dig you on the, they don't have enough guys, but I do think that it's also something a little bit more sinister. I mean, I don't want to call him straight up evil or nothing, but Bob Arum straight up said, hey, we don't give a fuck. And you guys don't give a fuck. I mean, fuck the undercard. They don't care, you know? So I do think that it's also, it probably both factor in. I'm sure that they don't have a whole slew of guys that they could put in there, but still, even if they did, I don't know they would.
You're probably right.
Just saying.
No, I think you're right. I mean, I'm not saying that Aram would, like, go out of his way to, like, you know, which I thought was really cool. I mean, you have to give him credit. Even though all these guys are pretty much slime balls, you just got to give credit to Golden Boy for making that Danny Garcia-Lucas Matisse fight on the Canelo-Floyd card, because they really did not have to do that. I mean, that Floyd-Canelo sold itself.
And, you know, regardless of the result going into that fight, you know, we said it, a lot of people said it, no matter how anybody wants to try to, you know, go back and revise history, that was a fight that was, as far as the fights in the sport we want to see, that was up there. That was high up there.
Yeah.
So for them to put that on the supporting of the, even on the pay-per-view, that was big. That was
saying, You're talking about Matisse and Garcia, right?
Yeah, and it was stupid that we were surprised by that, because that's the type of stuff we should see on, you know, pay-per-view undercards. But still, it was nice to see that that pushed and that precedent kind of pushed out there a little bit.
Yeah, we're used to seeing guys like Caputo Smith on pay-per-view undercards. Which kind of brings us actually...
Yeah, and Andy Ruiz Jr.
Yeah, we can. I mean, we can get into it more, you know, next week too. But it's also kind of, we'll have an interesting discussion about the Mayweather-Maidana undercard, where I think that they've kind of tried to give us star power and familiar names, but not really in competitive matchups. Although, you know, Khan and Luis Collazo is kind of being sold as a competitive matchup, and it may end up being that. Certainly wasn't anything anybody was clamoring for, you know, 6 months ago. But we can talk about that next week, I guess. Kind of the value of something like that versus something where you have, you know, lesser known fighters, but in more even matchups.
Yeah, and I mean, this has been a constant theme on the show at this point. Oh, and we didn't do the show last week, but and I had mentioned it the week before, of course, but it actually was this past week where we didn't do a show that would have been the 1 year like anniversary of when we started the show. So I guess give ourselves a round of applause or whatever, because it's been a fun year, dude. We've had a lot of fun doing this, and we appreciate everybody listening, of course. But yeah, this has been kind of a common theme on the show of trying to figure out what's better. Do we want to see all of these big names and celebrity status and star power or whatever you want to call it, or do we want to just see competitive matchups? And I mean, I feel like we can get both. If they really make these matches smartly, we could get both. I mean, of course, you kind of have to sacrifice one for the other sometimes, but at the same time, why can't we have both? I don't really get it. I don't see why we have to. Well, we'll get into the whole Mayweather-Maidana thing next week, of course. But
I think that if Golden Boy Promotions really kind of followed the example that Oscar De La Hoya set as a fighter, I think they would be doing great. You know, I mean, he was a guy who was in the position that everyone wants to be. I mean, he was basically like the kingmaker. You know, he could have fought whoever he wanted to, and he was basically the A-side for his entire career. And he really, you know, made the big fights happen and gave a lot of people opportunities to get in, you know, big pay-per-view fight. Guys like Floyd Mayweather, guys like Bernard Hopkins, you know, who previously hadn't really, you know, been those kind of star attractions. So, I mean, I think if Golden Boy, the promotional company, was willing to kind of match its fighters in the spirit of its namesake, you know, that would be great. But what I don't like to see is that a lot of these guys, it's like they're going backward. You know, they win a fight that maybe they weren't expected to win. And I'm kind of thinking, you know, I think Sean Porter's a great example, who we'll talk about, you know, going forward. But, you know, he beat Stephen Alexander, kind of an upset, and then it's like, now he's going to fight Malignaggi, and who's he going to fight next? Julio Diaz. you know what I mean? I mean, it's just like Keith Thurman wins a big, beats Soto Karas. Now he's fighting Julio Diaz. Lucas Matisse, has fought tons of world class guys. Now he's going to go fight the guy who got knocked out by Antonio DeMarco in 10 seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's just like, let's not, just because a guy starts to get their name and their profile up doesn't mean that you have to immediately pull them back to, like, a lower level of competition because you're trying to, like, preserve their, you know, record. I mean, let these guys fight each other. You know, let Porter and Thurman fight.
That's the way that Golden Boy has, the game, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like we said before, you know, Golden Boy kind of, like, you know, recycling these guys like Malignaggi and kind of making him a credible welterweight contender. It's just like...
Well, you know, that whole, I said that after, I know it was kind of like some, a lot of folks probably saw it as some like revisionism there, but especially in light of this past weekend, you know, pushing Malignaggi into that fight, and he's just not an elite level welterweight. He was barely an elite level junior welterweight, you know, a handful of years ago. And yeah, he's a name and he's on the broadcast team and he's a very good analyst and everything, but it was all just, it was an illusion, man. His entire run at welterweight and the title and all that type of stuff, it's an illusion. And so I don't, yep. I think that it was, you have to give credit to Sean Porter for doing what he did, but at the same time, this is just, it's smoke and mirrors. And so many people are getting the wool pulled over their eyes. And that especially, you know, goes to, that's the type of thing that Bernard Hopkins used to say all of the time back in the day, and now he's participating in it. So, you know, whatever. That, I guess that's just boxing, and we kind of have to just accept it. But just to try to put us back on track for a second, you brought up Beltran versus Terrence Crawford. Now, if we're going to kind of link that to what we were just talking about, I think that that would be a fantastic, you know, a big pay-per-view, like, co-feature. That would be an awesome big But unfortunately, that's probably going to wind up being something like an HBO World Championship Boxing headliner, because that's just kind of the stable that they got, and that's just kind of the game that they're playing over, you know, HBO and Top Rank right now. So, you know, regardless, you know, I really like Ray Beltran. I think that he's a hardworking fighter, and he pretty much walked right through Usmani like I thought he would, which was no huge going out on a limb prediction or anything, but still, I like him. Want to see more of him.
Yeah, and isn't it interesting that a lot of the Pacquiao's former sparring partners have kind of, you know, made their own paths and are getting more and more accomplished. I mean, even Sean Porter was, I think, at one point sparring with Pacquiao, although he was a little different. I mean, he was still kind of more of a prospect. But, you know, guys like Provodnikov and Beltran, I mean, I don't think they were really supposed to be world-class type of fighters, and yet here they are pretty close to the top of their divisions.
Yeah, and a guy that is, I believe, listening in, he's at least following the tweets on Twitter, but he might be listening in too. And I think his last name is, he's Matt. I think his last name is pronounced Andriewski. Just taking a guess. Looks Polish. Not totally sure.
Yeah,
but
I know
regardless, that. he said Beltran should get this fight. That said, Crawford is a tough matchup for him, but this would also be Crawford's toughest test. That pretty much sums it up for me. That's a fight
I'd
love to see, and they're pretty similar as far as how their career is going right now and what they've accomplished and where they're hopefully going. So, yeah, that's a nice fight. I'd like to see it for sure.
It's it'd be a really tough fight for Beltran, because Crawford looks like a guy, you know, really skilled boxer who has all the tools. But it's the kind of thing that, hey, you know, if you want to be the man, you got to, you know, find a way. And it's always interesting to see if, you know, more of kind of a slugger like Beltran can kind of find a way to break through against a pretty skilled, you know, quicker guy like Crawford. So I think it'd be a good fight. We would definitely favor Crawford, but, you know, those are the kind of matchups that you want to happen. You know, you want to see guys who are both, you know, kind of have an upward trajectory meeting each other, rather than somebody with, you know, an upward trajectory like a Keith Thurman. You know, I mean, just because Julio Diaz, I don't know.
Julio
Diaz fighting Keith
Thurman
this weekend? That's really happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, what the fight on the Pacquiao Bradley 2 undercard that I was probably most, you know, I guess satisfied with, I guess you could say, even though I didn't really agree with the ending, was Jesse Vargas versus Khabib Alakberdiev. And it was a pretty decent action fight. It was a little better than I thought it would be. But I thought that Alakberdiev, I thought that he took it personally. I thought that it was his fight to lose, and I guess he lost it. I didn't really think that Vargas worked consistently enough in the last half, but what did you think of that one?
Yeah, you're right. Thanks for reminding me, man. That actually was a really good fight, and I think potentially, you know, both of those guys could be interesting. I mean, I'd rather see either of those guys against Provodnikov than Chris Algieri, you know, unless something shocking happens and I'm proven wrong, you know. But, I mean, I think those are decent fighters at 140, and obviously they were fighting for a belt. I think it was a tough fight to score. I think it kind of could have gone either way. I don't remember it that closely what the scorecards were, but weren't like one or two of them like just kind of ridiculously wide that gave you the impression.
I think
that
there were. I think there were 2-9-3 cards.
Yeah.
For,
okay. So
Jesse
that was
what
absurd.
Was.
Yeah, and it kind of because I felt after the fight we're looking at like a split decision. I mean, it seemed to me like it could be a draw, it could be 7-5 either way, maybe. And I was kind of with you thinking that Alex Berdyaev got the better of it, but and then for them to announce like, oh, unanimous, you know, 117-111, just ridiculous. So, hey, that's boxing. See you guys next week.
Yeah, pretty much. We just summed up the entire fucking show in one fight. Yeah. Pretty much, you know, it was a solid fight, though. It was a pretty solid action fight. It had a couple different swings of momentum. You know, it was basically Jesse Vargas, you know, jabbing the crap out of Oliveira early on, kind of like, I don't know, stunning him. But he took apart his face pretty early. And then, of course, Khabib had to come back with some wicked body shots and then started pushing and really working in the last half of the fight. So it was... It was at the very least, you know, all scoring and all that type of complaining aside, it was a pretty good fight, and so I have to give some props to them for that because it was a fairly evenly, you know, fought matchup. So yeah, that's one of the lone, happy things I'll say about it.
And that was a perfectly fine, I think, you know, opener or a second fight on a pay-per-view card. I thought that was pretty good quality for that, to be honest. I mean, I'd kind of rather watch something like Vargas and. Malik Verdiov, then watch Adrian Broner, you know, beat up some dude, you know, Carlos with the other Carlos Molina, but you know, so yeah, I thought that one actually did pretty well, and I imagine you'll probably see Vargas because, like we've been saying, there's you know not too many opponents at 140 and 147 for top ranks, you know, more marquee guys, so I think Vargas will probably get in that mix, and hopefully, you know, maybe Malik Verdiov will have some more opportunities too.
Yeah, most likely. You know, I don't want to like say something positive and then like crap on the guy, but I'm just a little bit I don't know, just a little bit kind of skeptical about how far Vargas is going to be able to go, just because you know he had a close fight against Josecito Lopez that some people thought that Lopez should have won, although I didn't really think Lopez worked hard enough for that one. I thought he's you know.
I thought it was an either way kind of fight.
Yeah, it was close, but I thought that Vargas actually kind of pulled it out. Regardless, it was close, and that was kind of, you know, the problem that a lot of people saw. And then, of course, now he finally got the Alec Verdia fight was for a belt of something or other. I don't know. I don't even, you know, 10 years ago I could have told you who had all of the belts. I don't know, maybe I was mistaken in thinking they mattered. Maybe I've just gotten more sour and asshole-ish as I've gotten old, probably a combination of the two, but it was for a belt. And so
it was,
well,
I think
Jesse
it was, yeah,
Vargas
it was the WBO 140 or something like that. But
something like that.
Who cares?
And so now he's, yeah, I don't really give a shit, but that is now being pointed to as, you know, a big positive for Vargas. Like, oh, he finally won a belt. You know, it was a big, you know, coming of age, blah, 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 blah. Even so, it was a fight that, you know, a handful of people thought that he didn't deserve to win. And so it kind of makes me a little bit skeptical about what to think about him in the future. I don't know. I guess he could wind up going up to 147 doing well, I guess. I don't know. I'm just kind of – what do you think? Where do you think his first run is going?
I think he just came down from 47.
Yeah, I just don't know what he's going to do at 140 pounds with top rank. I mean, I don't know. Oh, that's right.
Maybe Alvarado.
Well,
he comes out of the Marquez fight intact. I don't know. They have guys, you know, maybe Rios. Although, I don't know what weight Rios will be at.
Yeah, they're already saying he's not going to be able to get below welterweight. I'm like, welterweight? What? Weren't you just at lightweight the other day, dude?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
I like Rios a lot, but it's just, I don't even
I
know
love
where
Rios.
What
I hope
looking
that he
at
made
right
enough
now.
Money against Pacquiao that, you know, and maybe he can eventually do a third fight with Alvarado, but I'd kind of like to see him get out of the sport as quickly as possible because I just don't think he has a lot more to offer except for more just, you know, bloodbath-type fights, and I've seen enough of his brain cells get destroyed at this point. You know, I'm content to just enjoy the memories and hope that he takes his, you know, few million dollars and enjoys the rest of his life.
Yeah, it's tough not to like that guy. You know, I mean, he's done some stuff or like
really
said some things
guy.
That I, yeah, he does stuff or said stuff that I'm not really, you know, fully behind, but every fighter does that, first of all.
It probably
but,
makes
you know,
him more likable,
as
though, that he's always around Robert Garcia and Alex Ariza. But no, I actually I don't mind. I don't mind Garcia. Fuck Ariza.
You know,
but
damn, shots fired. I like him, but yeah, I'm with you on the potential retirement thing. I mean, I'm not one to be calling guys to retire here and there, but if he just can't even find the discipline, you know, to be a stand-up fighter and, you know, keep himself in some type of shape in between fights so that he's not moving up weight classes for no reason, blah, 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 then I don't know, man. I don't want to see a guy like that just get hurt, cause, especially because of his style and the way he fights, whatever.
Right, he's just a brawler. And, I mean, I do think that they could at some point maybe get a third fight with Alvarado. But, you know, those were violent affairs. And, I mean, I think both guys have taken a lot of punishment. We'll see how Alvarado does against Marquez. I think that could be kind of interesting. But, you know, assuming the seeds play out, if Marquez beats Alvarado, and as long as Alvarado doesn't, you know, take too much of a beating, I mean, I think that the third fight with Rios is still viable. But after that,
yeah,
I'm fine with both guys, you know, never seeing them again. I mean, do you think either of them can beat Pacquiao or Marquez or Provodnikov? I mean, we've seen Alvarado and Provodnikov. I think Rios and Provodnikov would be pretty ugly. So,
You know, Mike Alvarado is awesome. Another. Well, he's kind of on that same, you know, level in a couple different ways as Brandon Rios, where he seems like a cool dude, you know, flawed but cool guy, fun to watch inside the ring, et cetera, et cetera, and could also, you know, lose to Marquez like Rios lost to Pacquiao, but still be viable against Rios, you know, just like Rios is to Alvarado, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, and also looking at that whole Marquez-Alvarado thing, I don't even know exactly what to think. But
I really like Alvarado's personality. I think he's a really, you know, articulate, compelling guy. I thought the face-off thing that he did with Provodnikov was kind of eye-opening. You know, I thought because Provodnikov showed a different side of his personality, you know, and was much more kind of introspective and philosophical. And, you know, you always hear fighters like, no, I'm not scared. Or, I don't, you know, I, you know, whatever. And Provodnikov just laying it all out on the line, like, yes, I feel fear, but I confront it, you know, and all this stuff. And
yeah,
I think, and I, you know, I find Alvarado really compelling too, but like you said, I mean, it's a guy like Rios, he's, you know, he is very, I think, you know, he was immature in a lot of ways and kind of got some negative publicity, you know, early in his career. But I thought, you know, the 24/7 and the last year or so and getting to know more of his personality, I think he is a likable dude. And you definitely, I think, can see the toll that, you know, the sport has taken on him. I mean, maybe as much as any kind of active fighter who's at the, you know, near the top of a division or, you know, that high of a profile. I mean, I think you can really see the wear and tear on this young guy. And, you know, a fighter like Rios, who's been in a major pay-per-view and made millions of dollars, seems to be the kind of fighter that you would like to, you know, like to get out, you know, on top and kind of be smart with the money. And, you know what I mean? It's not a guy that where it's like you need to keep fighting because you got to feed your family. It's like you just made, you know, $3 or $4 million against Pac-Man. That should be enough to tide you over for a little bit. And, you know, maybe you can make $1 million or $2 million against Alvarado in the third fight and then... You know, because eventually, I mean, we know where this leads. It's getting beat up for far less money.
Yeah. There's no question. I mean, that's just kind of the nature of the sport over everything. But especially with a guy with that type of style and with a guy who, you know, point blank just doesn't really seem to be a super great decision maker. You know, a really cerebral guy. So
you mean like outside
like
the ring or whatever?
Yeah, exactly, and I'd like to see him do well, but away from boxing, I just don't really know, you know, what the odds are of that. I guess really quick before closing it out on the whole Pacquiao-Bradley thing, the only other fight on there was Brian Vasquez versus Jose Felix Jr., which we had, you know, kind of really briefly previewed on with Scott Crist the other day, about 2 weeks ago. But anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there. I was kind of nonplussed by the fight. I didn't really think
it was all right. I thought Vasquez looked pretty good.
It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. It was just, you know, I kind of was just shrugging at it. It was like, all right, I'll watch this. But it didn't you know, get my loins burning or anything.
I hear you.
Yeah, that was about it. That was pretty much all I had to say on it. Yeah, well, hey, let's get into some fucking Bernard Hopkins hating, dude. We got a lot of bad shit to say about that guy because we just do, because he's old. and he's still fighting and in shape and old. And also, he's advanced in age, and he was born a long time ago, and he was old. So, yeah. What did you think about the whole Bernard Hopkins unifying the extra special super light heavyweight championship belts of America and the rest of the world?
Yeah, you know, I didn't really care that much about it. I thought it was kind of unlikely that Shumanov was going to be able to really trouble him. How did Hopkins get his other belt? Did he?
Wasn't it
from
like
Cloud?
Vacant
did he get one from Cloud?
Yeah, I think it was like vacant, and he won it from Cloud, or maybe Cloud had it, and he won, I don't even remember.
Yeah, no, Cloud had one, I think.
I can't even remember at this point. And I had this discussion on Twitter, like, I'll say it really quick, but I had this kind of like discussion on Twitter last week while I was like at the zoo, of course, with my family. I started getting hit up about this because I had said something about the light heavyweight title. And I can't remember exactly who it was off the top of my head, but a couple of guys were getting kind of ornery at me about saying that, you know, Bernard Hopkins unifying these belts, that does not make him the champion. That, you know, this is not how it works. Adonis Stevenson is the champion, and there's really no arguing that.
Even
and
that
they were
kind
going
of
on about.
But yeah, you're right.
Yeah, well, it's unfortunate that it kind of has to be like in question like that. But at the same time, it's kind of clear if we're moving in the line that Adonis Stevenson is
not
the champion.
It's not Hopkins.
Not Hopkins, and
that
so
sure.
That was the argument on the other side, was that like, well, he has two belts, so he's the champion, and
he beat two guys who got robbed against
Campillo.
Or, I mean, two guys who robbed Gabe Campillo.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and, like, you know, this is exactly why the whole belt thing gets so tedious and lame. Because I know that it's not even – sometimes it's not even any less lame to go the lineal route and all that type of stuff. But at the same time, this is exactly what we're talking about. You know, going into situations where – I mean, how many total fights did Shumanov have? He had like 16 or something like that, and he's been fighting for like 12 years or something. You know, he's been inactive. He basically should have lost to Gabe Campillo twice. William Joppy enters the equation. Yeah, that William Joppy.
Just the fact that he fought him in 2000, whatever year it was, is just...
It's insane, dude. It's really insane. And so it's difficult for me to really say that these belts mean anything at all or anything more or on par with the lineal type of championships when this is exactly what we're getting. And on top of that, it was, you know, 10 rounds were horrible to me.
Yeah.
I didn't enjoy watching that, but maybe people did. I don't know. Did you?
Dude, I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't even really watch it.
Oh.
I watched the Porter Malignaggi fight. I watched like two rounds of the Hopkins fight, and then I just left, and I came back and watched the post fight interview. I just didn't care.
Well,
I mean, I just don't fucking care. I'm sorry, you know. I mean, it's like that's like world class boxing, and somebody wants to be like a real snob about it and be, oh, you don't appreciate it. Well, okay, I don't appreciate it. I thought that was going to happen. I don't think Shumanov is a great opponent. I think the light heavyweight division's a mess. I feel like Kovalev deserves a shot at somebody, you know, and it's not going to get one. But now you're going to have this, like, trumped up, like, three belts on the line and two, you know, three world championships. It's the legitimate champion, you know, with Stevenson, who knocks out Chad Dawson's corpse. And then, you know, Hopkins, who beats, you know, these kind of middling fighters who really shouldn't have even had belts in the first place. So I just don't really, you know, I'm kind of intrigued. Look, I will watch Hopkins against Stevenson. That fight intrigues me a little bit. But, you know, I just felt like after seeing the way that Hopkins came out, I mean, it's just so frustrating to watch that kind of stuff and seeing these guys, and it's like, really? Like, can't you just throw some punches? I mean, you're not going to win this fight unless you throw punches at him. He's 50 years old.
Yeah, I mean, dude, his entire style, you know, and I've mentioned this on Twitter before, so I mean, but just for people who don't follow Twitter or who don't follow me on there or whatever, to me, I have not been all that interested in a Bernard Hopkins fight for roughly 10 years, maybe a little bit less, but right around where he fought Joe Calzaghe, and it was like one thing where I could say, you know, For a long time, for a really long time, especially, you know, right around when he beat Trinidad, and we're talking about 2001 now, going way back, he was just the type of guy who was the epitome of what they call a dark horse fighter.
You know, a guy that you might not think very highly of. You know, he doesn't have a whole lot of flashy skills, but he's basically going to come in shape, and even if you beat him, he's not going to make you look good, period, like ever.
Yeah.
And so now fast forward to where he's at a point where not only is he not making you look good, he's not making himself look good. Right around the Calzaghe fight, my whole point with that was that in the pre-fight promotion, I remember he said at least one time, maybe more than that, I'm never going to let a white boy beat me. And it's not because I'm white. I used to be a big Coffin
like
fan.
But
when he said, when he started saying shit like that, I'm just like, all right, now he's getting racial with it. Now it's not even that, like, he's saying,
I've never
like,
let a white
you know,
boy beat me.
Wasn't
that at the Mayweather-Hatton?
It might even have been
stuff?
Like, well, it was at the, I remember him saying it in the Calzaghe pre-fight because HBO did a, like a 24/7 type thing on it. And it was when, some media member in the UK, and I can't remember who it was at this point, but some media member or somebody who was linked to the fight or promoting the fight or whatever, was they were trying to get him to go to some type of press junket or something like that. And so he was starting to say some shit like, oh, now I'm going to get ignorant because you're pushing me and I'm going to get real ignorant. And then a subsequent press thing, he was like, yeah, I'm never going to let this white boy beat me. A white boy's never going to beat me. And I'm like, all right, see, now I can't even, like, root for you outside the ring for, like, the things you stand for, because before you were all, like, against the system and, you know, you didn't like the way that this worked and you hated Don King because he did this way and all this type of shit. And now I can't even support you, dude. And then, of course, he goes in and, like, fakes fouls against Joe Calzaghe, and that, for me, is, like, kind of where it started. He started, like, faking fouls and hip shots and behind the head this and that, and I was just like, dude, this is getting really tough to root for you, man. And ever since then, it's devolved for me, literally. I just can't even get into it.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to admire as far with Bernard Hopkins. There's no question. I mean, the fact that he's even able to compete against even, you know, these kind of, you know, I don't know, I'm going to say journeymen, but, you know, guys who, you know, let's be honest. I mean, like, real world-class fighters beat Tavoris Cloud. They beat Karol Murat. They beat, you know, Shumanov. But that he's even able to compete at his age is pretty amazing and, you know, inspiring or whatever. You know, so there's a lot to admire about what Hopkins has done. And I also, you know, I do have an appreciation for that kind of negative style. I think it's interesting that, you know, a guy like Hopkins, who at one point he was a physical specimen as a middleweight. I mean, he was strong and fast and quick and much more active, you know, threw a lot of punches, but he got old. And so he figured out kind of more unsavory tactics that he needed to be able to compete on the highest level. And it is pretty cool that, like, you know, even that Chad Dawson, which was kind of like the clear, you know, in most people's eyes, I think the clearest loss that Hopkins has had, even that wasn't a blowout. I mean, and every single one of his other losses, you'll find some nutcase out there. I mean, in some of these fights, I did think that he had an edge. But, like, you'll find guys saying that Hopkins should have got the decision against Calzaghe, which I think is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Of course, a lot of people scored both Jermaine Taylor fights for him. I mean, in every one of his losses, pretty much. I thought Calzaghe clearly beat him and thought Calzaghe looked pretty decent in that fight. But other than that, you know, I mean, he did make guys look bad, even the guys who got the official wins over him. And, you know, like Pascal with that draw. I mean, I think most of Hopkins' results have been debatable, and I think it's a testament to his, you know, his style that he's able to kind of slow down the fights to his own pace and, you know, be effective in the spots that he is, and especially at his age, to be able to do that. But all that said, I mean, you're right. There have been I go back and forth between kind of being entertained by it and being just kind of more, you know, annoyed by it. But, yeah, I mean, it really shouldn't come as a surprise, the whole white boy thing. I mean, you remember throwing the Puerto Rican flag on the ground, and then, like, after beating Trinidad, you know, trying to start the USA chant, making it, like...
He's not a lamb, you know what I mean?
No.
And I made no mistake, but I thought that when he started, for me, for whatever reason, that was, like, when it started getting a little overly racial and was kind of a tipping point for when I was like, all right, now I'm kind of, like, having a tough time even just supporting what you're doing here. So, you know, I make no mistake, I'm not dumb. I just thought that that was kind of a point at which I had to, you know, kind of draw a line in the sand a little bit. But, you know, I hear you.
I mean,
it's not totally unlikable, and there are things that you can take from what he's done that are really admirable, you know? there are.
Yeah, I mean, there are, but I'm kind of with you. It's like I don't feel like I need to like prove some kind of boxing street cred. Like I have to sit there and watch crap just to prove that I watched it to like, you know, go on Twitter and get like my boxing head, you know, medal. I mean, two rounds into the Shumanov fight, I'm just like, this sucks, you know. And there's other shit that I'd rather watch. I DVR it with the
purist.
Thinking that, you know, maybe I'll watch it, you know, rewatch it. The only time I think I came back in the room when I heard the knockdown in the 11th round. And I was thinking, oh, man, Hopkins is actually going to stop this guy. Wow, that's bad. But, you know, it was just me. It was just completely not surprising. But I think, again, you know, Golden Boy, Showtime has done an excellent job of shaping the narrative and kind of building Hopkins back. I mean, we're all supposed to forget that he just, you know, lost to Dawson and... You know, we're kind of, I mean, now it's like we're supposed to be hyped up that he's fighting Stevenson, even though, you know, in my mind, I mean, I think that Kovalev's really getting screwed there at light heavyweight.
Well, hashtag boxing heads, hashtag elite, hashtag purist. But it's
right.
Actually, well, you forgot all that. I just wanted to throw it in there. But I think that that's a good point, too, and it kind of opens up a little separate little side discussion because you know, the guy who I've actually known for a number of years because he used to be a poster on the Max Boxing forums, Jeff Pryor, who wrote and covered Hopkins Shumanov for Queensbury Rules. He I'm not gonna disrespect him. Like I said, I've known him for years. He's a very good writer.
Yeah,
I don't mean no disrespect, but you know,
I've done a lot of favors for you here, Hansby.
You know, I come back and just busting your balls a little bit. But he's a, you know, he's a very good writer, but he is like an admitted Bernard Hopkins fan. And you kind of had to take that into account when reading his report on the fight. But I did think that it was interesting that there was another really good writer who also, you know, did a recap of the fight, you know, the quote-unquote best boxing writer on the face of the planet, according to our show, Jimmy Tobin, who did it for Cruelest Sport. And he took basically the opposite approach, where, you know, Jeff Pryor was kind of in awe of what Bernard Hopkins was able to do. And, you know, in a way, rightfully so, because there, like we've said, there were admirable things that you can take from what he's done, and he's in good shape for a 49-year-old. He's been in better shape as a 49-year-old than I am as a 31-year-old. And,
than I ever,
you know,
have
et cetera,
in my
but,
life.
But yeah,
yeah.
Pretty much ever. But at the same time, then Jimmy Tobin, the way that he looked at it, which is just, you know, happens to kind of be the way that I look at it, which is it's Bernard Hopkins. The entertainment value is almost nil. And on top of that, Beibut Shumanov, his any claim to a title is pretty dubious on his part. And on top of that, as far, you know, aside from like the title claim, it's basically like, you know, look at him inside the ring. He's not a particularly fast guy. He's not a particularly talented guy. You know, we just saw him, you know. Well, you didn't see it because you didn't watch the fucking fight. But basically he went in and he tried to play some type of defense game that he didn't have. He's not
a
defensive guy.
Right?
Yeah. He went in there and then tried to, like, out-defense Bernard Hopkins. And Shumanov, like, doesn't have a very good defense. That's not the name of his game. So, you know, that's also credit to Bernard Hopkins for being able to play the mind games that he plays. But at the same time, you know, just look at it inside the ring and look at the result. The fight sucked because Shumanov barely did shit.
Yeah.
So anyway, the opposing viewpoints, I can kind of see both ways. I just happen to lean towards Mr. Tobin's viewpoint quite a bit.
Well, the thing is, the other thing is, like, on this kind of comeback trail, since he lost Dawson, I think Tavoris Cloud's probably the best fighter of the three. And I feel like he's almost gone backward in terms of, you know, I mean, I'll admit, I thought Cloud was going to give Hopkins a tough fight just because I was thinking, hey, Hopkins is almost 50. And, I mean, Cloud's going to be active, and he can punch a little bit, and he's a tough, durable guy. Now, you know, Hopkins, that I thought was an impressive win for Bernard Hopkins. I enjoyed Hopkins' fight with Karo Murat. I thought it was more entertaining than most of his usual fights. I thought Murat was, you know, a solid enough opponent, I guess. But this here, I just, you know, and it's not like I wasn't planning on watching. I mean, I had the game, I had it on. I just, after a couple rounds, I just was like, I just can't sit here and watch this crap. I mean, I knew that Hopkins kind of just felt like the result was preordained, you know? And I thought, going in, I was kind of hoping, like, oh, maybe Shumanov will do some stuff and kind of pressure him. But it's this weird situation with B-Hop now because, like, you know, building toward this fight with Adonis Stevenson, what the hell does Adonis Stevenson really have to gain? Like, well, what's the best-case scenario? He knocks out Bernard Hopkins. He knocks out a 50-year-old guy, puts a 50-year-old dude into a, you know, a concussive state.
Yeah.
He's never going to get credit for beating prime Bernard Hopkins.
Well, I have to just quickly interject because the dude who is I don't know if he's one of Danny Garcia's bodyguards or if he's Danny Garcia's main bodyguard. His name is Carl Allen. He's listening to the show and he said, "If you don't watch the fight, how do you write about it or talk about it? It's kind of your job, James."
Well, it's not really my job.
You've got a point.
But you know, I don't.
There's no Friday night fights.
Hey, I don't write. I didn't write about it. You know, I don't. Yeah. I don't.
Oh.
I mean, if I was going to write about it, yeah, I would have watched it. But I just don't feel like you need to watch every fight on the planet to have an informed opinion. You know, it's probably the first Bernard Hopkins fight I haven't watched in a long time. But and I have it on the DVR and kind of had the plan to like possibly go back and take a look at it. But based on everything that I saw and read, I feel like I have enough of a, I mean, do we really need to analyze why Hopkins was able to defeat Beboot Shumanov?
You both have
Does that really require, like, some kind of in-depth analysis? I don't know.
In my opinion, not really. Especially if, you know, if you did have the luxury or the, you know, unfortunate outcome of, or the unfortunate luck of having to watch that fight, whichever way you look at it. Yeah. I mean, I've said this before, but you didn't really miss that much, in my opinion. Although he does have a point, I guess, but still, I don't really think that his point should make you go back and watch.
If
that
you know
fight
what, if because, it was my job and if I'm Dan Rafael and I'm getting paid to write about it, I would absolutely have watched it.
Fair enough.
And if you know TQBR Radio
whatever.
Wants to give me a salary, I will happily watch it.
Yeah, it's yeah, whatever.
And by
yeah,
the way, I love Danny Garcia.
Oh yeah, no, we're huge fans, real big fans, huge fans. But anyway, yeah, I had to interject and throw that out there. I thought that was pretty funny. But yeah, I mean, I kind of just, to me, I'm almost like afraid. I truly am almost afraid to see Bernard Hopkins go forward and fight somebody like Adonis Stevenson because then he really would have the claim of being a legitimate light heavyweight champion. And then they'd go back, they'd start tallying up algorithms and crazy little statistics about what the number one song was when, you know, Bernard Hopkins was 4 years old or some other type of shit that, you know, we're talking about. He's the light heavyweight. Oh, fuck, dude. I'm just thinking about it. I'm getting a little nauseous. So I am kind of scared going forward, and the problem is that going forward, I think that it was Kevin Ioli who had said yesterday, somebody retweeted him, that he's done picking against Bernard Hopkins, and that's kind of where I am, dude. He's just finding ways to win, even if it's not the level of the opponent. He's a smart dude, and he's figuring out how to, you know, get Steve Smoger on his side while he's fucking humping Carl Murat's leg or hitting him in the back of the head, and then Steve Smoger's like, it's legit, keep going. You know, shit like that,
yeah.
And I'm like, ah, dude, I can't pick against the guy anymore. I'm getting kind of sick of it.
I have no problem picking against him because I'm going to pick Stevenson to beat him pretty big, I think.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. I mean, I agree. I mean, I think he's, you know, he's earned the right to have some kind of credibility, but let's not forget that, you know, Dawson did pretty soundly outpoint him something like, you know, 8-4, and that was a pretty shitty fight. So I think that against the, you know, the right style of opponent, I mean, he's just fighting guys who are really limited. I think Stevenson
has
power, and he's a much better boxer, and he's got good footwork, and I don't, if Hopkins can beat Stevenson, that will be, you know, another, you know, go right there with, you know, beating Kelly Pavlik, beating Tarver, on another unexpected kind of win for the guy, and all credit to him if he can do that, but I favor Stevenson pretty heavily. I think Stevenson's legit.
I think that Stevenson just has just enough of a window open for Bernard Hopkins to potentially beat him
And I think that a guy like Kovalev would be far more dangerous to Hopkins. He probably recognizes that too, because Kovalev lets his hands go a little more. But at the same time, you know, well, once we get there, you know, Stevenson has still got to get past, you know, your boy Andre Fonfara. So we'll
yeah,
see what happens there.
My vision of Stevenson Hopkins is I really think that I can see Stevenson landing like a huge punch, staggering Hopkins, but Hopkins obviously has a great chin. Hopkins kind of stumbling backward and Stevenson like unloading on him and then the referee jumping in and stopping it so that Hopkins can say like, I wasn't that badly hurt. I was blocking all those punches, and he can basically claim it was a bullshit stoppage.
I could totally see that.
You know, Stevenson will get like a TKO and then Hopkins will, who knows, maybe he'll retire or maybe he'll fight another person like Shumanov for another belt. But
probably.
I favor Stevenson big in that matchup. So we'll see. And I mean, I just think eventually age has got to catch up to him, right?
But I guess. I feel like it already has if against the right opponent, but if against guys like Murat and Shumanov, it's just not going to. But that's just my feeling on it. Well,
we'll see.
That was the talk of the weekend, I think. And, you know, I guess supposedly rightfully so or whatever. But, you know, probably the big story of the weekend, or maybe the most impressive thing of the weekend, at least in my view, was Sean Porter stepping up and absolutely just laying waste to Paulie Malignaggi the way he did.
Yeah.
Now, I'll have to kind of give a little asterisk on there just because I have, and that's just kind of my view on it. But, you know, Paul Malignaggi was around for a long time, and he's already talking about, you know, maybe I should have retired or maybe I blah, blah, blah. You know, I don't totally disagree with him, and it could, you know, prove in the near future that Paul Malignaggi is basically done at the elite level if he was ever there in the first place. But even so, even if Paul Malignaggi is done or whatever, the way that Sean Porter stepped in there and pretty much just walked right through his ass and knocked him out, that was impressive stuff. And I've been one of the Sean Porter detractors in the recent past. So I have to kind of eat a little crow there and congratulate the guy.
Yeah, I wasn't like, you know, too high on Porter either, but I think his last two fights, he really has gone out there, and I loved what he did against Devin Alexander. And again, against Paulie, you know, it's the kind of performance of a young guy who's hungry and trying to get to the top and is really going out there and, you know, fighting his ass off. And I think you see far too many of these fights with guys, and it's just kind of the first one coming to my head, and maybe it's not a great example, but like a Danny Garcia against Mauricio Herrera. And I know some of that's style and some of that's that Herrera's tough, but, you know, I like to see these guys, like the more talented fighter kind of get out there and really just, you know, set the tone from the beginning, and I love how aggressive that Porter was, and that he just attacked him right off the bat, never let him get into a rhythm, ignored Paulie's kind of complaining, you know, to the referee and stuff, and just focused on his game plan and got him out of there. And I think it was I don't think Paulie's anything special, but he's, you know, a competent fighter enough to go 12 rounds with Broner and give him a tough fight, and Porter just blew him away. So I think it speaks a lot to the fact that Porter's probably better than what we thought he was, and I think he's one of the more, you know, most exciting young contenders that Golden Boy has. I hope that they will eventually, you know, get him in there with, like, him and Keith Thurman. That's just a no-brainer. But unfortunately, the way that it works sometimes is, you know, we have two undefeated guys. We're going to kind of protect them, and, you know, we'll see. But I think there's a lot to be excited about with Sean Porter, and I mean, I just love the way he approached these last two fights, where, you know, he went in against Alexander as an underdog, left no doubt, you know, just went out and took it. And just too often we see in these, you know, kind of big, you know, when a young fighter gets into that kind of a fight, we see these kind of cautious performances, like guys who are kind of like fighting not to lose rather than fighting to win. And Porter back to back now, I mean, he just went out and grabbed it. And I think it's a great result for him.
Yeah, and, you know, at the very least, you know, if you're going to be negative about it, which I've said a few negative things about it, but I'm trying to be, you know, positive because he deserves some praise here. But, you know, if you're going to be negative about it, yeah, that's the whole thing, is that at least, you know, when Pauly fought Broner, I thought that Broner won that very clearly. However, there was at least a little bit of a gap for Pauly to say, oh, you know, I thought I did well, or I thought I won, or whatever. And, you know, fine, that's okay, I disagree, but whatever. And Porter just left no gap, no doubt, whatever. He just walked right in there and was like, nah, fuck this. You know, if they're going to question me, I'm knocking this dude out. So I have to give him credit for that. That was exactly what, you know, he needed to do to make a statement. And no matter how negative I want to be about it, I got to give the guys props. You know, he stepped in there, and Matthew Mojica, who I'm just guessing that's how his name is pronounced. I've never spoken with him, but a lot of people follow him on Twitter, the Fight Source. He had suggested that, you know, Sean Porter has had a lot of success against guys who aren't natural welterweights. And I think that's also a fair point. And that kind of points to what I was talking about the negative. Just trying to stay positive for the dude, I guess, which I never do. I'm trying hard.
Well, yeah, I mean, Julio Diaz and Alexander and Malignaggi, I guess they all came from lower weight, but I mean, there's almost everybody at welterweight did, you know, at some point. I mean, I guess you could look at a bigger guys like Thurman and Porter and be like, those guys are natural welterweights. But fuck, I mean, you know, what's going on 2 weeks from now? Maidana and Floyd, I mean, they're not really,
yeah,
quote, natural welterweight if you're just going off of, like, what division they started or where they, you know, where they came from. So, yeah, it's a valid point. But if you look at the guys who are the best fighters at welterweight, who are you looking at? Floyd, Pacquiao, Bradley? They all came from lower,
yeah,
weight classes.
And I was trying to say the other day that it's kind of a, even though it's a fairly deep division, it's kind of a funky division in that way, because there's a lot of round robin type of stuff that could go on at 147 pounds that are, you know, wide open type of fights, even though there might be an apparent even size gap or talent gap or whatever, because it's just a deep division and kind of a weird division in that regard. You know, I think that if you would put a guy like Sean Porter in against a Thurman, maybe, which that fight has already kind of been talked about, because what we'll be talking about in a minute, Thurman Diaz, kind of a foregone conclusion in a lot of our minds, regardless, Porter versus Thurman, that's the type of fight that we're talking about as a possibility. And that's the type of fight that is, you know, on one hand, I really like that fight. It should be a fairly even matchup. I think that it would be a fun fight, but it's also kind of getting back to that whole point of, is this like a headlining type of fight in any sane world? Like Bart Barry said the other day, you know, this is almost a step past a showbox type of fight, because they're, you know, Porter's probably a little far past that now, but Thurman is still kind of in the midst of proving himself a bit. Regardless, it's a good fight. And so hopefully they do eventually get there.
It's a different era now, but, you know, I mean, you can make a case that both of those guys are top 10, you know, welterweights.
Yeah, no,
they're both undefeated. And they've both looked really good in recent fights. So, I mean, I think it's a fight I'd be really excited for that. As far as can it, you know, is it a headline fight in the sense, can they draw tickets? Probably not. They're not really on that level yet. But, man, I don't know. I just think Golden Boy and Showtime, they've done such a great job of kind of convincing, you know, selling these matchups. Like, I was amazed how – I kind of wish we had gone last week, because I was just amazed how, like, hyped up for Pauly and Sean Porter that so many people were. And people were kind of like, man, this is a 50-50 fight, and, you know, Pauly's tough and all that. And I'm like, you know, Sean Porter just went out there and just pretty much whipped Devin Alexander. To me, going from Alexander to Pauly, that's like a sideways move, if not a slight downtick in terms of where they're at right now in their careers. So I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I don't want to, like, totally shit on either of them. But, you know, I think it goes more to the point I was making earlier about the whole, you know, rather than being a pay-per-view code feature or something like that, it's going to be a total championship headliner. And they're like,
right,
I won't be happy
with
Keith, that.
If Keith Thurman and Julio Diaz is a Showtime championship headliner, then certainly Thurman and Porter would be. But, yeah, you're right.
Exactly. That was my only point, not so much to downgrade them, but to downgrade the way that boxing has, you know, evolved
in the last 100 years. And it's just, you know, compared to, like, Kovalev Agnew or Provodnikov Algieri, it's probably, you know, it fucking looks like Hagler and Hearns or Hagler Leonard.
Yeah, exactly. But regardless, you know, as far as Sean Porter goes, well, actually, as far as Paul Malignaggi goes, what's your thought on him? Like, where do you think he may or may not be able to go?
I'd kind of like to see him just retire, you know. I mean, I think that – I don't think he necessarily needs to. There's probably guys – he can beat or be competitive with. And, you know, maybe if Khan beats Luis Collazo, but it's not a complete beating, you know, maybe you could do a Collazo-Malignaggi fight. That would make sense. I just, you know, I've really kind of grown to like Paulie as a Showtime commentator. I think he's great on the air. And, you know, it's definitely made me, I guess, root for him a little bit more in the ring. And so it was tough to see him, you know, just see the raw emotion on display from after the fight. And you could tell he was really disappointed. And I think he was actually probably, you know, pretty badly hurt that he had to go to the hospital and go under observation for a while.
Yeah.
So it was tough to see that. And, you know, maybe it's just too soon. I mean, I can't see a guy in that situation and then, you know, 3 days later try to recommend him to go, you know, fight somebody. But I think there'll be some alternative, you know, some options for him, like I said. I mean, like something like a Collazo type of fight where you could kind of play up the Brooklyn angle or whatever. But I do hope that he's done at least as far as trying to sell him as kind of a welterweight, real top contender. I mean, they tried to kind of feed him to Broner, and I think he was a lot more competitive than the powers that be anticipated.
Yeah.
You know, he had a nice win over, you know, this kind of past prime version of Zab Judah, who was always a very beatable fighter, even at his best. And, you know, and I think Sean Porter kind of showed, like, that exactly where Paulie's at. He's just not going to be able to beat, like, the best of these young guys. I mean, if you put Paulie in there with Keith Thurman, I think he'd get knocked out and beat up pretty badly. I mean, we've already seen him against a better version of Amir Khan than Khan is now, probably. But, you know, we've seen him against the top guys, and it's always kind of ended in the same way with him getting beat up. And there's, you know, there's a lot to like about Paulie, but personally right now, I think if he's talking about retirement after the fight and kind of the emotional state that he was in, and he has a great job at Showtime, that probably, you know, I'm thinking for Showtime he's got to be making six figs or something like that. So it's probably not that much less than what he would be making for, you know, for his next fight. I think he should just stick to commentating, you know?
Yeah, I tend to agree. And on top of that, I mean, I touched on this, you know, I say this all the time. I talked about this already on Twitter. That's just how it goes. You know, Twitter's much more immediate and, you know, always kind of being updated. And some people who listen to the show follow us on Twitter. Some people don't, et cetera, et cetera. But regardless, you know, I have said this before, just so nobody thinks I'm trying to pass this off as a new idea or something, that Paulie Malignaggi has already taken a handful of ass kickings, even in fights that he won. I thought that Lovemore and that guy kind of beat the crap out of him in the rematch. That was the one where Paulie came in and had to get his weave cut off mid-fight because that shit started, it was like Joe Dirt. It looked like the end of Joe Dirt where he was wearing like the Rasta wig and shit. And it was, like, all hanging all over the place, and he wound up having to get it cut out, like, in between rounds because it was bothering him, and he was starting to get his ass kicked. I mean, that was a fight he won, and he was already kind of, like, getting his ass kicked there. He took it from Hatton, Cotto. You know, he kind of got beaten around a little bit against Broner, I thought, even though he made it closer than a lot of people thought it would be, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, we're starting to get to a point where there are multiple instances where Paulie Malignaggi was kind of getting his ass kicked. I feel bad for the guy. He seems like a nice dude. I don't really want to see it anymore.
Yeah, and let's remember, man, he's had a great little kind of like resurgence the last couple of years. I think probably, you know, in fairness, I mean, probably more than he deserved as far as like skills and talent. You know, I'm not talent, but like, you know, skill-wise and where he actually, you know, realistically belonged in kind of the landscape, I think he completely overachieved. I mean, let's remember 2 years ago or 3 years ago, you know, he's fighting Orlando. Right, but he's, you know, he's on a pay-per-view undercard opener fighting Orlando Lara for like $40,000 or something like that. To be able to build him back, I mean, it all started when he went to Russia and got that big win over Sinchenko. You know, so he went out and won that fight and kind of earned it, but Sinchenko was just a completely unproven guy who had never fought anybody. You know, and because of that, and because of how likable he was on Showtime, he got these big fights with Broner, with Zab Judah, and now with Porter, and I think he got some, you know, some nice paydays the last couple of years. So it's not a great tragedy that, you know, he just, if he can, you know, transition into broadcasting, I think it's a great thing for him. I mean, I think two or three years ago, the idea that Paulie Malignaggi would be headlining a Showtime boxing, you know, championship boxing card and getting paid seven figures, it would have been unthinkable. And he had, as far as I know, he had two of those against Broner and against Zab Judah. So, you know, I think he's done really well for himself in his career.
Yeah, there's no question. And, you know, and I kind of blurted it out there, but a lot of people brought it up, and it's a totally 100% valid point, in my opinion. The fact that Pauly has done as much as he has done with almost no punching power whatsoever, that's impressive. And he's always been a dude also that his entire career he has broken his hands in, like, every other fight. And, I mean, I've never broken my hands. I used to fight a little bit when I was a teenager, and I never really injured anything, thank goodness. But I can't imagine going through a 8, 10, 12-round fight with broken hands. That's just insane. So you got to give the dude at least some amount of credit, even if you don't like his mouth, his excuses,
whatever.
Oh, I think
he's got a ton of heart. Tons of heart, you know, in all of his fights. I mean, yeah, that's who he is. I mean, he's a guy who's a skilled boxer, and he's got a big personality, and he's just, you know, just short of that kind of elite level. But he's had a really good career.
Yeah.
And I think it's great that he ended up on Showtime. I mean, I think he's just fantastic, you know, as a commentator.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I think that he's – a lot of people don't like him, I guess, as a commentator, and – I just disagree. I think he's a very good analyst. He's very astute. He speaks very quickly, although I speak quickly sometimes, so I can't really talk shit about that. But regardless, I think that he has a very good job there. He fulfills his role very well. And, yeah, I'd like to see him just kind of stick to that if possible, although I know that that's unlikely to happen. And the opener or whatever on that card, I just kind of wanted to get your opinion on that one. Peter Quillen versus Lucas. I guess it was – I heard a couple different pronunciations. I thought it was Konechny or Konechny. I don't even know exactly how it's supposed to be pronounced because they said it a few different ways. But regardless, kind of a forgettable fight too, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. And it's
Lucas
too bad.
Lucas kind of followed him around, whatever. I feel bad for Quillen in a way.
Yeah. Quillen kind of, I don't know if I want to say he's regressed, but, I mean, he definitely has not looked great in his last couple fights. And, you know, I'm not sure if after fighting a guy like Endom, and I know that their options are limited, but, you know, is that really a step forward to fight Gabe Rosado, to fight Lucas Konechny? You know, I mean, again, it's kind of like, okay, he has a belt, you know, he's regarded as one of the best in the division, but... it just seems like I don't know what their plan is. Maybe they're hoping that one of the stars from the lower weight class will eventually come up and challenge Quillen for the middleweight title that he has. I don't know, but you know, Quillen
yeah,
is
I don't
a guy
know
that
what
I think
the plan for that guy is.
Yeah, Quillen looked awesome a year or two ago. He looked like a guy who had a lot of potential and a lot of, you know, tools. Was a really kind of sharp, accurate puncher. You know, maybe some of this is that he's just not getting the right kind of competition to bring out the best in him right now. I mean, he's still winning those fights, but I think it's fair to say his stock has dropped quite a bit. I mean, you know, there was a point where we were kind of bemoaning the Cold War because we couldn't get Golovkin and Quillen. But, you know, right now, I mean, I personally think Quillen probably knocks his head off. I mean, I'm sorry, Golovkin knocks Quillen's head off, you know.
I was about to say, dang.
No, no, but you know, a year or two ago, he seemed like the kind of fighter, like if anyone in that division had the tools and the possible talent to be competitive with, you know, a guy who looks like a monster like Golovkin, you'd think that Quillen would be that guy if it wasn't for the Cold War. But yeah, it's just kind of weird what's happened to him. So I don't know, maybe some of it's just that, you know, he's not getting the competition to really be able to get up for the fights or to improve as a fighter. I was surprised that Rosado was able to give him such a good fight.
Yeah, and I mean, he got stiffened up a little bit, against Lucas Konechny. In like the third round or something like that, he got nailed and kind of like his legs went a little stiff there, and I was like, oh. But he pulled it together, and, you know, but I agree. He looks like he's almost kind of regressed a little bit because maybe a year and a half ago, I thought that he was a guy that could be right in the mix. And, of course, now with the whole HBO whatever thing, that's obviously not really on the table. But at the same time, I'm also kind of wondering if I just absolutely didn't know what the hell I was talking about with that because he hasn't looked like the same type of guy.
Yeah, and this just seemed like kind of a pointless fight to begin with. You know, I don't think anyone was really out there demanding Lucas Konechny be an opponent for Quillen, but And very early on, you hear before the fight, Konechny says he will retire if he loses this fight. It's like, oh, that's great. And that sounds like a guy who really, has
his
mind
looking
on
real far into the future there.
Right. I mean, he's already got a foot out the door, and then he comes out and basically doesn't throw any punches for the first, like, three rounds, probably until that punch
him around a little
caught
too much
him.
And... yeah. I mean, whatever. I think
Quillen really should be able to, get somebody like that out of there, or at least hit him a lot more than he did. I know Quillen seems like more of a boxer counterpuncher himself, but it just wasn't. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't the kind of performance that's going to excite anybody. And
no,
I think we
wasn't.
Still probably don't really know what we have with Quillen. I thought he looked really good a few fights ago, and
yeah, and we don't. And unfortunately, the guys that he could potentially be going in against are just across the road and are not really on the agenda at this point. But, I hope that he does eventually get in there, because just having him kind of linger over with Golden Boy and no serious options kind of sucks. But, whatever, regardless.
Well, I imagine eventually you'll see Canelo against Quillen, something like that, or assuming that Canelo's star continues to kind of rise. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's probably where the big fights for Quillen are going to come from. Of course, if they make Quillen Danny Jacobs, I'm not sure if that's really a gimme fight for Quillen, the way that he's looked against, Konechny and Rosado.
Yeah. Yeah.
That actually could be a good fight. I totally forgot about that. That's a pretty interesting fight if they end up making that. But, after that, you're right. Where does the winner go from there? You kind of, wait for the big money fight from a guy from 154 coming up, and Canelo would seem to be the most likely to do that.
Yeah, I think so. So, and even then, based on what we've seen, and I'm not saying Canelo's like the monster that they're really trying to make him out to be, but based on what we've seen, I might even just straight up pick Canelo for that one.
I think I probably would too, but... just because, you have to respect, obviously you got to respect Canelo for taking all these fights, taking the Arislandi Lara fight. I thought Angulo was, a pretty good fight to come back after his first loss against Floyd, and just being in the ring with a guy like Floyd for 12 rounds. I mean, that's a big learning experience for a young guy. So if Canelo does end up fighting Quillen, let's say in the next year or so, and Quillen doesn't really progress his level of opposition, I do think you got to favor Canelo, not just because I think right now he looks like a better fighter, but also he's had more experience against higher level of competition. And I think in boxing, it's so important, and I think if you're ever in a pick 'em situation, you go with the guy who's been in against the tougher opponents.
And he's actively getting better too. And I would definitely argue anybody who disagrees
way.
With that. I feel like he's actively getting better. So
I think the Lara fight is going to tell us a lot about where he's at.
Yes. Yes, definitely. Before we get on to what's coming up this weekend, I guess I just wanted to quickly mention, if I could, the ESPN2 Boxino middleweight and I believe it's lightweight, right? Lightweight tournament? I can't remember what weight it is. I'm horrible.
Yeah, there's a lightweight tournament. But
yeah,
I think
the middleweight
one was on last Friday,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and, I wanted to kind of give them some praise, if I could, real quick, because we have a few times that I thought that they've been doing a really good job with the Boxino tournament and trying to generate some interest by doing this type of format. Not that it's a new format, but that they're, carrying it out the way that they are, I think is a very smart move. They basically have these guys, as far as I can tell, contracted to fight a certain amount of times and then within a certain amount of time and stuff like that. And so I just wanted to kind of throw it out there that I like what they're doing with these tournament formats. And I feel like different promoters on different channels could stand to learn a little something with this. And also ESPN's getting a little bit more into boxing as far as investment and, I mean, Klitschko fight notwithstanding this coming weekend, because I really just don't give a shit about that at all. But they did buy in for the Stivern-Areola fight, the Stivern-Areola rematch, and that could wind up being a relatively important and exciting heavyweight fight, which is something we don't really get very often anymore. So anyway, and of course, on top of that, they put my tweet
on ESPN, so I'm a fucking celebrity now. So
I heard about that, but I didn't see it.
Of course you didn't, because you don't watch that show.
No, but I had it on. I was flipping between something, but I had it on the ESPN, and then I just saw on Twitter, you know, everybody hyping you up, and I guess I missed it. Did anybody screenshot that thing?
Yeah, I did. I think I posted a picture of it, but it surprised me.
Look through your timeline.
Yeah, it just surprised me because you know, if you tweet along with like Showtime fights and stuff like that, they have somebody in charge of social media who will, you know, show your tweet on the bottom of the screen sometimes, especially if you do the little hashtag or whatever.
Yeah.
But I had said something along the lines of, I like the Boxino tournament format because of what I had said a minute ago, was that it, you know, it creates a little bit more interest in the boxing on ESPN than is sometimes otherwise, you know, put out there. But also on top of that, it's almost like an old school type of way where these guys are fighting like once every 4 to 6 weeks. And they're, you know,
yeah, I think like
of course, was going on and on about two of the guys having visible injuries while they were fighting. And I said, you know, and I commented on that it's also, that's true. You know, whether they're hurt or not, they're basically contracted to fight. And so that's kind of an old school way of doing things, you know, fight hurt or not. And I had commented on that, and then, you know, I kind of turned away, and then I heard, oh, here's a great tweet from Patrick Connor, and I was like, wait, what? What did he just say? So it just surprised me because, you know, I just said when they do it on Showtime, they don't read it on air or anything like that. So, yeah, it was cool. Anyway,
that's huge, man. I think my biggest honor was one time getting retweeted by Dan Rayfield, but I was actually trying to, like, make fun of him, but I think he just saw his name and then just retweeted it.
Oh, he was probably thought you were eating a burrito.
Yeah, no. Dude, didn't your boy Jake LaMotta fight like 5 weeks after taking the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, which is like one of the famous beatings in the history of boxing, and he fights like a month later? And these guys need fucking 4 months to build up a pay-per-view?
Yeah, they're talking about they need, you know, 8 to 10 weeks to promote a fight and all this type of shit. You know, it was a pretty common thing back in the day, and obviously, I'm not trying to get too nostalgic here, but just to throw out a fact, it's a pretty common thing back in the day that when fighters had a big fight coming up, they would go to the city that they were fighting in and fight somebody who they knew that they could beat, or just basically get a professional sparring match in against somebody and knock the fuck out of them in, you know, a few rounds. But it was a professional fight, so they could get hurt, they could get cut, they could get whatever, and it would be like 2 days before the fight. It was pretty common. I'm not, you know, voicing something that, you know, nobody did. This happened all the time. And it was off TV. You know, they didn't promote it a ton. It was just a fight. It was just a fight that they did in the meantime, almost to, like, stay in shape. And so that's another reason why I think that the format's cool, is because it doesn't really give the guys a chance to get out of shape. So anyway. So I was pretty much just throwing that out there, that I liked what they're doing, and I can dig it.
I think it's really cool.
Yeah. So anyway, we got like a little less than 25 minutes left, and we still have a fight card, a huge fight card, total monster to preview. It's Keith Thurman versus Julio Diaz. Wah, 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 wah. Oh, and also on top of that, you know, it gives me the opportunity to go ahead and unleash this shit, because before the fight goes down, we're going to have to hear Foley's fight plan. That's what we're going to have to hear.
All right, nice. Nicely done.
Not bad. So what's your outlook on this fight?
My fight plan, I don't know anything about, you know, fight strategy and all that stuff, which I probably should. That's my job.
I couldn't think of that. Was just like the best sounding thing I could come up with last.
It's got
minute.
The alliteration.
You know, I did that on like my phone. Exactly.
Yeah, I like the.
I recorded it on my phone with my daughter sitting right next to me this morning, and she was sitting there like, I even recorded one of her saying it, but I couldn't edit it right, so I just used mine.
Nice. Hopefully that'll catch on, become a thing.
Yeah. I hope so.
Yeah, I was it's just interesting that, yeah, I mean, like, they, you know, well, good for Julio Diaz for kind of, you know, he gave Porter a tough fight, his first fight. He obviously gave Khan a, you know, pretty tough fight. So I guess good for him to kind of parlay that into another, you know, another opponent role and probably a pretty decent payday. But I think, you know, Diaz is a good boxer, but he's a smaller guy. You're putting him in against a big puncher, somebody who has looked, you know, better and better in each fight. And I think Thurman, yeah, I don't know if he's the real deal or not, but I think he's got enough that he's probably going to end up, it's tough to say by knockout, but because I think Diaz can take a pretty good punch, but I don't know. I mean, I think Thurman's going to just overpower him. I mean, I see this as a pretty one-sided mismatch and not really a fight that anybody was particularly clamoring for. But it's this weird phenomenon of, like, these guys, like, you know, doing better than expected against Golden Boy's, quote, stars. You know, like, Diaz gives Amir Khan a rough fight, and Malinaji gives Broner a, you know, better-than-expected fight, and Collazo beats Victor Ortiz. And so now they can just kind of, okay, well, we don't have to make Porter and Thurman now. We can have Porter fight, you know, we can have them fight these other guys and these viable matchups. And it's like, no, they're not really viable. I don't want to see Thurman and Julio Diaz. I don't really, I'll watch it, and I think it'll, you know, it could end with some kind of spectacular knockout or brutality or something like that. But I don't see it being really a competitive fight. And I think if Diaz is able to trouble Thurman and kind of expose him and, you know, or whatever, you know, give him a, you know, do better than expected, like he did against Khan and like he did against Porter. You know, maybe that'll be a. I don't know. I don't know what to think of. You know, is that going to be an indictment of Thurman, or are we going to have to start acknowledging, hey, maybe Diaz has kind of resurrected himself and now he's a pretty, you know, tough out for these young welterweight contenders?
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know.
You know,
but I don't think it's going to go that way.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No. I'm
yeah,
done.
And I'm. Well, you fucking better be, because I'm talking now. But, no, I mean...
Hey, this is Foley's fight plan, not Connor's fight plan.
My bad, dude. Oh, well, that actually reminds me. So now I have to counter with... shit, where'd it go? Oh, here it is here. Beard's boxing points. Yeah, that's what I have to counter with, my boxing points. So, you know, I really like Julio Diaz. He's a nice dude. I remember in one of the first fight cards I ever covered was his. And, you know, I remember at a different fight card when Golden Boy was kind of first starting out and they were partnered with Saquon, which is a casino out here in East County, San Diego. You know, Julio Diaz used to kind of be attending random fight cards, probably because he had some type of, you know, promotional interest or something in it. But regardless, very approachable guy, really nice. A very solid fighter from Coachella, and the Coachella Valley area, which has produced a number of, you know, tough guys. Regardless, you know, we're talking about he was knocked out cold by Juan Pollo Valenzuela, who is, you know, turned out to be a total bust just on power alone in what was that, like 2002 or something like that? Did that happen? You know, he's a really nice guy and he's a fine fighter, but at the same time, I just, he's far removed from it.
And he got drilled by Kendall Holt, too. Yeah, I'm changing my pick to Thurman.
Kendall Holt?
Thurman KO now. I don't know why I was thinking Diaz.
And I mean, you know, a real, you know, grueling and just ass-kickery type of fight from against Julio,
Juan Diaz.
Jose Luis Castillo. You know, and then one, Diaz also beat the crap out of him. I mean, this guy, he's not a bad fighter, but this is just, we're talking about these things were years ago. And so I feel like it's more of an indictment of, for example, Khan's chin that, you know, Julio Diaz was able to stay competitive with a handful of punches and everything. And then on top of that, kind of an indictment, I mean, it remains to be seen, but a little bit of an indictment on Porter that I thought Julio Diaz could have taken that first fight. I mean, it's not, I'm still tentative about, you know, talking shit on Porter, but still, I'm now that kind of things like that made me a little skeptical, you know. So
well,
anyway,
I think he redeemed. I think Porter redeemed himself. I don't know. He pretty clearly
won
the rematch.
The point's more about Diaz than him.
But
at this point,
just
going into this fight, I'm just kind of like, I don't know what Julio Diaz has aside from maybe some guile, maybe you know, a slightly better skill set or experience than Thurman that could.
and really get him this win legitimately. I don't know.
He might be a little craftier than like Soto Karas. I'm not sure if he's really
exactly.
better though, if he's more of a threat really to beat Thurman, you know. I don't know if he's better than like the Jan Zavec dude, you know. I mean, I feel like Thurman's had fights against similar level of competition, and we're at that point where it's time to kind of step up here, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And that doesn't mean fighting Pauly. That doesn't mean fighting, you know, Colazzo. I mean, it means like fight like a real top guy, because most rankings organizations, you know, have Thurman as like a number 6 or 7 welterweight in the world.
Yeah.
And do I have to reiterate how Tim Bradley just fought fucking Pacquiao, Provodnikov, Marquez, and Pacquiao back to back to back to back? And Thurman's fighting Julio Diaz, Jan Zavec, Soto Karas. I know they're at different points. I mean, Bradley was a really accomplished, you know, he basically was a champion at 140. But, you know, it's just time for these guys. Like, let's see what they've got. And that's why I think, like, after this, I mean, you got to go Thurman Porter. You know, you got to get the top guys. Just stop recycling. You know, I don't want to see Devin Alexander in there against one of these guys. I just want to see Thurman and Porter fight each other. Let's see what, you know, I think that's the kind of great fight between two undefeated guys where the winner really, you know, takes a step to that next level. And just like Danny Garcia and Lucas Matisse. Now, I think Danny's team kind of, you know, put the brakes on that a little bit. But, I mean, that was a fight that could have, you know, really, he could have gotten the Mayweather fight, I think, if he'd wanted it.
Well, you know, and I would just like a little bit, a better dose of reality here. And if we're going, like, living in reality and instead of living in a place where we're just trying to get as much money out of these guys as we possibly can and match as, you know, cleverly as we can or whatever, rather than as competitively, then what would happen is they would say, all right, well, Amir Khan just got banged all over the place by a dude who's, you know, years removed from his prime, and Julio Diaz. How about we give Amir Khan the opportunity to come back and, like, knock Diaz out in front of a different audience or some shit, rather than having Julio Diaz move forward? And, I mean, you know, bless the dude for getting the payday. Like you said, I'm happy that he's getting the opportunity. But rather than just being the quote-unquote nice guy and going, yay, you know, pat him on the back and give him the payday, let's give people what they're earning and not put Keith Thurman into this fight that is, you know, I'm sure going to be well attended because it's at the StubHub Center, which is a great venue and accessible, et cetera. But is this a headlining type of fight? No, it is not. That's the bottom line. And, you know, this kind of, we've had this discussion multiple times over all these types of fights lately. And it's just, it's stupid. I don't want to have to keep having this discussion. I want competitive fights that are also on the top level. That's what we deserve when we're paying all of this money to be boxing fans and staying dedicated to a sport that just, you know, bends us over in a loop all the time.
Yeah, I kind of, I don't know. I mean, I like one way to kind of judge fights is look at it like what's the point of this? You know, like, what is the point? Is the point to, like, kind of, you know, see what Thurman's got, like test Thurman? I don't really think so, because I think he's beaten better guys than Diaz already, you know? There's a point to see if Diaz can get some spectacular knockout. I mean, I don't know. I mean, not Diaz. You know, Thurman can get a spectacular knockout. It's kind of like Hopkins-Shumanov. Like, and I know, you know, when I lost my boxing cred points because they said I basically tuned out after the first couple rounds. But, you know, it's like, to me, there's no point in that fight. Hopkins could have fought Stevenson already. He didn't need to beat Shumanov to make the Stevenson fight viable. It didn't improve his ranking. Okay, it got him another belt. If you give a shit about belts, then awesome. Hopkins, now he has 2 belts. Let's all go fucking jag in a circle.
Yay.
But,
yay.
You know, if you don't care about that stuff, it really, the Shumanov fight did nothing. It didn't make him a more viable opponent for Stevenson. You know, he's Bernard Hopkins. You know, it's like, and that's kind of like this fight. Like, whatever happens Saturday night, I mean, the only thing that can happen for Thurman is something bad. Diaz goes 12 rounds with him. Diaz wins rounds. Diaz makes it a close fight. You know, Diaz, like, Thurman can't really do – if Thurman knocks him out in the first couple rounds, okay, awesome. Kendall Holt did that on Friday Night Fights like 3 or 4 years ago. You know, I mean, it's just this fight doesn't do anything for me. I mean, because it's not going to make me more excited to see Thurman and Sean Porter. It's not going to make me more excited to see Thurman going forward. It's not really going to improve his ranking to beat a guy like – you know, and it's the same reason why I kind of crapped on the Amir Khan-Colazzo fight, because it's like, if Khan beats Colazzo, what does that really do for him? Does that mean he's back? I don't know. I think he's got at least anywhere from 5 to 10 wins on his career already that are better than Colazzo. So, it just doesn't prove, you know, it's like, I like fights where it's like the fight really has a point. Like, the winner is going to, you know, gain something from it. Either, you know, really increase in the, you know, move up the rankings or, you know, move toward another fight or whatever. And it's like, you know, you, Hopkins didn't need to fight Shumanov. I mean, you could have made Hopkins and Adonis, and it would still be a huge fight, regardless of whether how many belts are on the line. You know, and that's kind of like, I don't know. I don't see Thurman. I mean, he could get a spectacular knockout, and yeah, that's always cool to watch. But at the same time, don't we know already that Keith Thurman can knock out a ton of people? Do you know what I mean? I mean,
for sure.
So
the fight's
not
proving much.
I'd like to see him fighting.
The only thing that might prove is if Julio Diaz does win. That would be the only thing that it could teach us, is that maybe, you know, Keith Thurman should have developed better or something. But even then, I don't know. But, you know, speaking of back, our boy Lucas Matisse, we have about 10 minutes, but our boy Lucas Matisse is returning on the undercard of that against John Molina. So, I don't know. I guess this is there are also bad things to say about this fight, but at the very least, at least John Molina has some semblance of a chance here because he can punch a bit. But what do you see happening here in that Matisse-Molina fight?
I mean, to be honest, I think it's probably even a worse mismatch than the Thurman-Diaz fight, you know? And
I
like Molina a lot. I mean, I think he's you know, I just like dudes like him. He's not a great boxer or whatever, but he's gotten a couple wins against guys who are more skilled than him, like Hank Lundy and Mickey Bay. And he's got some punching power. So I like that he's upset the apple cart a couple times. He's easy to root for. But, you know, all that said, I just think Matisse's in a completely different class. I just don't think they really even belong in the same ring together. And I think it's going to end really badly and really violently. And I think Molina's going to get knocked out. You know, if not cold, he'll get, you know, he'll be just staggering around the ring and the referee will jump in and stop it. I don't see the point. I just don't see the point at all. I mean, I know Matisse lost his last fight, although that was, you know, it feels like that was kind of a long time ago at this point. So I guess they're maybe
trying to
deal
with... And it was somebody on a totally different level, you know.
Yeah.
A totally different level than John Molina.
You can't forget. I mean, and I know maybe it was kind of fluky or whatever, and, you know, weird things happen at the very beginning of fights sometimes, but, I mean, DeMarco knocked out Molina in seconds, and you're putting him in with a, and, you know, Matisse is 10 times the puncher that DeMarco is, and he's probably a better boxer and just better all-around fighter, and there's just nothing to make you think that, I mean, you could say, oh, okay, Molina's got a puncher's chance, and yeah, it'd be cool if he lands a big punch and shakes up Matisse a little bit, but I just don't see it. I think Matisse's got a good chin. I think he's, best case scenario, maybe Molina catches him with a big punch early and rattles him a little bit. I still think Matisse comes back and knocks him out. You know, and I think the odds are something ridiculous.
Yeah. You know, it would be a huge accomplishment if Molina were able to pull that win out. But, yeah, I'm with you on that one. I just, you know, I'm trying to find something for Molina here, which is, I guess, that he can punch a bit. So, you know, like you said, he's a nice kid. Seems like a nice dude. It was awesome that he was able to pull a win against Mickey Bay out of the fire there. You know,
that was great.
That was a pretty big moment. But, you know, that was also Mickey Bay. That was not a guy remotely on, even after coming off a loss, that was just not a guy on Lucas Matisse's level, needless to say. So, yeah, I think the odds are that something bad is going to happen to John Molina, and I hope it's not too bad because he's a nice kid. He's a nice kid.
Yeah, I mean, it's the kind of thing where you're just kind of like, hey, Matisse's at 140, Thurman's at 47. I know Thurman's a big welterweight, but, like, why not have Matisse and Thurman fight? And they'd be like, oh, you can't do that. No, you can't. Nah. Why the fuck not?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that'd be better than what we're getting on Saturday, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't know. What are you trying to build Matisse back up for? You know, I mean, we all love the guy. He's an exciting fighter. I don't think he needs, like, a tune-up knockout to show us, like, oh, yeah, that guy's a big puncher. Yeah, we know. No shit.
And
I don't need to see Molina's fucking unconscious body to prove that.
And putting it into perspective, you know, they were talking about the winner of Garcia Matisse going on to fight Floyd Mayweather. And now, of course, that, you know, Maidana thrashing Adrian Broner created a bigger story.
So that's what they went with.
Yeah.
But regardless,
well,
you know, looking
Danny's
at it,
team resisted it too because I think they
definitely.
They didn't wanna, but you know,
definitely. But regardless, you know, if Matisse had won, they probably would have pushed pretty hard for Matisse Mayweather or something like that. But then, you know, conversely, Matisse lost, and now we're seeing him against Molina.
You know, and whatever.
That's just, it's just kind of the way that things turn out like that. You know, we're just going to be complaining forever. Who gives a shit?
Yeah, I mean, I understand there's not, like, that many world-class fighters, like, that are on Matisse's level. I mean, he's one of the best junior welterweights, so, you know, it's easy to say, like, he should be fighting, a, you know, an equal. Well, there really aren't that many. I mean, there's Danny Garcia, and then there's a couple other guys, and he's already fought those guys and all that. I get it, you know, and I'm all for fighters being active, but, like, for 6 months out, and, you know, I just think Golden Boy has enough names that they could be doing better things and just taking more risk with guys, especially guys who aren't really ticket draws. I mean, like, what does it hurt to have, you know, Porter and Thurman fight each other? I mean, what does it hurt to have Matisse in there against, you know, somebody better? I mean, like, why not Khan and Matisse? You know, that would that would get me going more than fucking Luis Collazo would. No offense, but you know what I mean? Like, why not Khan and Matisse? Khan's back, right? He just won his two comeback fights. Well, of course not, because they know
totally
Matisse
back.
Would probably knock his head off.
And then that kills the Mayweather-Khan whole thing.
Right, that everyone's
that
been demanding for years.
Yeah, for no reason at all.
But Pacquiao-Mayweather is way past its expiration date. Way past its expiration
date. Oh, yeah. Nobody cares.
Terrible fight. Wouldn't even watch it.
Fucking boxing. Fucking
I'll get around
boxing,
to watching
dude.
That when I watch the Hopkins-Shumanov fight.
Well, dude, speaking of nice kids, I think I don't know if they're going to be showing three or four fights on that main Showtime card, but I know that the third one is Omar Figueroa versus Jerry Belmontes. I don't know. I don't know. Whatever.
Like
I mean, that
one,
could even
one
wind
fight
up
at beatdown, or
most likely. I mean, it could even wind up being competitive, but it would be one of those like accidentally competitive things. You know what
be
I mean?
Be like Arakawa and Figueroa.
Yeah,
like, wow,
it would
why
be
is he
one
brawling
of those things
with this guy?
Where,
he should be better than him.
Exactly. Well, because he's going to brawl with everybody. So, I mean, yeah, that's the third fight on.
I love Figueroa. That's the thing is, I love like all three of these fighters I'm all about. I mean, shit, I love Figueroa, Matisse, Thurman, sweet. But they're not fighting anybody good. And I'll watch the card because I think, you know.
Well, because we like
I'm
these
a sucker
fighters.
For watching,
that's pretty
watching
much,
these
yeah.
guys knock people out. I mean, sure, but
yeah, we'll watch the card because we're boxing fans and we like these fighters. That's
right.
Pretty much all it is. So and, yeah,
people
and they
throw
take
punches,
advantage of that
unlike shit. The main event in the past Saturday.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, from a competitive standpoint, you're just about right. And the thing of it is like Figueroa and Matisse could be a huge fight. I mean, yeah, it's not ready right now, I guess. But and same thing with you know, or Matisse and Thurman, you know, I mean, they're like each one weight division apart, but you know, it's like give me those big names against each other. Don't give me some bullshit about like you know you got fucking like I mean how long are you gonna build all these fights up? I mean, eventually Figueroa will be at 140, and it just sucks that like boxing is always like it's always like the next fight.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm just going off the top of my head. I mean, I know no one's demanding, like, Figueroa and Matisse right now or Matisse to go up and fight, like, the welterweight guys. But I'm just saying that, like, here's an example on this one card where you have, like, three guys and you could potentially make, you know, way better fights among each other than among what you're doing, you know, who they're actually fighting. I mean, fuck, how about for Figueroa against John Molina?
Yeah, that's
that
the
would
type
be more
of fight we should be
to
looking
me
at.
Than either of the two fights they're involved in. At least you know, Molina's not going to be undersized, and he's, you know, and Figueroa is not as big of a puncher as Matisse.
Well, I don't even know what I'm about to say even means, but just to add some type of perspective, I mean, the people listening, you figure out, I don't even know what it means, but just because I happened to see it, I just was, like, looking and happened to see it. There was a 24-fight card in the Dominican Republic the same day as Pacquiao-Bradley, too. Yeah, 24 fights were on that fucking card. And a whole bunch of them were awesome. 8 and 10 rounders. It was like, what? Holy shit. I mean, they probably weren't that good, but goddamn, I'd love to go to a local card that shows like 24 fights. I'd probably be asleep after like, you know, half of them, but still.
And if you didn't get an underground VHS of that card, you're not a true boxing head.
That's exactly what I'm hinting at, actually. You know, if you're not a purist, then fuck you. Fuck you. That's what I'm saying. So, yeah. Well, we got about a minute left. We basically jam-packed that show about
you know, as well as we could, really. I was trying to moderate the time, but it was tough because we just had a lot of shit to talk about. But, yeah, what I'm going to try to do, and I guess I'll spill the beans ahead of time or whatever, but what I'm going to try to do is this next week before Mayweather-Maidana, when we preview that fight card, I'm going to try to see if our boy Tim Stark, so the founder and editor of Queensberry Rolls, and maybe somebody else we'll see can jump on and preview that fight card with us. But, yeah, we'll see what happens next week. I'll close it out here if I can there, James. And everybody,
all right.
Thank you
Thanks,
for listening.
Man.
Yes, and read James' stuff, badleftfoot.com. Read my stuff, queensberryrules.com. Thanks again, everybody, and take it easy. Bye.